Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Are past, and now the long, slow, frozen grind towards spring is fully and truly underway. I hope you all had a very happy New Year's, safe, stayed in kind of New Year's weekend. That's what we did here. It was quite uneventful. A lovely day of college football bowl games on Friday. Enjoyed them all. Didn't get the outcome I wanted in practically any of them, but I enjoyed them all. My Mountaineers, Jesus, they came out and looked like Florida State was a high school team. And then they just decided, well, okay, it is a high school team. We're going to quit because they're not going to play anymore. And got their rear ends handed to them. Well, at least we don't have to worry about the fundamentalist Coach Muley. Getting a contract extension out of it, maybe, hopefully. We're praying, sort of, to the extent that we pray. My favorite game of the day, honestly, was the nail-biter between Northwestern and Auburn. That was a heck of a game. And a gutsy call at the end. An absolutely gutsy call at the end. I respected that choice. Ball game tonight starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the Fiesta Bowl, wherein both Boise State and Texas Christian University managed somehow to get screwed at the same time. Then again, maybe they wouldn't have fared any better against, say, a Florida than Cincinnati did, because Cincinnati certainly laid an egg. But at any rate, we have a very, very busy night ahead of us. Tons of information. Tons of stuff to talk about tonight. And, of course, being as it's Monday, and it is the first Monday of the new year, it's the 4th of January, after all, it's Moran Monday. Carnival Barker voiced him. Hurry, 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 step right up, see your Morans, coming right down the midway. Only for no cost whatsoever. Come right inside the tent, you will see Morans of all stripe, all types. No, they're all repiglickins, because that's what Morans are. No one will be admitted after the show, 5 minutes into the show. Hurry, 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 get your program. You can't tell the Morans without a program. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and we got Morans o'plenty. We got Morans at Fox. Yeah, who knew? I know. We got a Moran congressman from Georgia. Now, what is this clown's name? Sandra put me onto this New York Times story today, and it's a horror. Representative John Linda. John Linda. L-I-N-D-E-R. Can't pronounce my R's or G's when I'm speaking Southernese, as Jimmy Buffett has noted. Representative John Linda, a Georgia re-pig-licking, who is absolutely going crazy about all these poor people insisting on being able to eat here in America. The story, by the way, if you want to look it up over at the New York Times, is living on nothing but food stamps. I read all three pages, and just, all is not well in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Home of the brave, land of the free, home of the free, land. What? It ain't good here. Among other things, what's got Moran John Linda, that's L-I-N-D-E-R, John Linda, up in arms is the number of people on food stamps. As the New York Times article notes, with food stamp use at a record high and surging by the day, there is a new class emerging, and that is people who are reporting only food stamps as their sole asset. Out of those millions of Americans who receive food stamps, 6 million Americans report that they have no other income. Of course, that opens the door to a philosophical discussion of why in God's name, what kind of Christian nation counts food as income? But, you know, who the hell am I? The New York Times story, published on the 2nd of January by Jason DeParle, says food stamp recipients' numbers and the numbers of those receiving food stamps and having no other income were rising before the recession because, hey, anybody remember welfare reform? Tougher welfare laws made it harder for poor people to get cash aid, but the number has soared by about 50% over the past 2 years. About 1 in 50 Americans, 1 in 50, that's one person, just go to the grocery store, one person in there, 1 in 50. One little section at your local high school basketball game. 1 in 50 Americans is now living in a household with a reported income that consists of nothing but food, but a food stamp card. That's 0.5% of this country. No, I'm sorry. That's 2% of this country. See what happens when I try to do math on the fly? 1 in 50, 2 in 100. That's 2%. 2% of this country has no income whatsoever with the exception of food stamps. And food stamps come out to, well, for instance, there's two brothers and a sister living together under one roof in Florida that is, and Florida is sort of the ground zero for the reportage in this story because of the fact that Florida seems to keep some level of meticulous records of these nightmare statistics. Two brothers and a sister living together under one roof. They share, and it is their only source of income. Jesus, that still just makes my eyeballs roll back in my head. They share as their only form of income $300 a month in food stamps. Three adults, $300. Okay, that would be $100 a month per person. Okay, divide that by 30. It's $3 a day per person. They pool their resources. They got $9 a day to live on. Figure it, a 1 pound bag of pinto beans at the grocery store, last I checked, is about, what, $1.35? $1.35 a pound. Now, if you want something to flavor those beans, a hunk of salt pork's going to run you another $3. So we're near $5. A banana? You say you want a banana? No, no bananas for you. You want an orange? No, no orange. No apples either. You want a cup of coffee in the morning? Well, you might, on $300 in a month, you might be able to make, you know, one of the what used to be a 3 pound can of coffee stretch through the month. If you make it weak. And if you only have one pot in the morning. Iced tea, sugar, lemons. It's a mighty hard scrabble existence out there for 2% of the adult population of this country. No, I'm sorry, of the entire population of this country, 2%. 2 in 100, 20 in 1,000, 200 in 10,000, 2,000 in 100,000. 20,000 in a million. 200,000 in 10 million. 2 million in 100 million. And of course the question is that acceptable? Is it acceptable to have that kind of hunger in this country? To have that kind of desperation? Without food stamps, we'd probably be starving, says one person interviewed for this story. Another person interviewed in the story, Wanda Debenham, is a grandmother. Her voicemail message encourages callers to have a blessed good day. In her life, she's driven semi-tractor trailer trucks. She had a dream of selling real estate. But it all really collapsed when she lost her Starbucks job earlier this year. Or not earlier this year, last year now. And she lives with her son and sleeps with an 8-year-old granddaughter under a poster of the Jonas Brothers. Yeah, this is that America that the Republicans, the Republicans, the miserable, I've got mine, screw you party have always dreamed of. The only problem with this scenario, as far as the Republican Party are concerned, is that there aren't enough people in that statistic. Because the hungrier and more desperate a human being is, the less that human being will work for, and the more afraid they are to raise their heads or say boo about their working circumstances. A scared worker, a desperate worker, is the worker that all of corporate America most yearns for. Let's see. But anyway, going on to page 2 is the reference to Georgia Republic and Congressman John Lindell. He's the ranking minority member of a House panel on welfare policy. Jesus Christ, why would you even let a Republican on a panel on welfare policy? That's like letting a fox in on a panel on chicken wire outside the chicken coop policy. More than $60 billion will be spent on the food stamp program this year. Bear in mind, however, that, well, we've been over this before, but it bears repeating. The food stamp program's genesis had nothing to do with feeding hungry people. It was welfare for America's farmers and food producers, whereby the federal government bought the food from the farmers and food producers and turned it around initially as something called commodities. Commodity cheese, commodity butter, commodity dry milk, commodity powdered eggs, commodity rice, commodity beans, and turned that around to America's hungry. Then it morphed into the food stamp program, wherein sort of the funny money was printed by the government and stapled into little booklets and given to poor people who could then take it to the grocery store. But sometimes, see, as a Republican would note, the food stamp program was rife with opportunities for fraud. Because, you see, what happened was that a person using food stamps, let's say the bill is $4.82, and you whip out a $5 food stamp and you give it to the cashier, well, by God, the cashier would give you back 18 cents American money that you could then pool together with your other 18 cents and go out and buy yourself a malt liquor. Yeah, because, right, poor people. They need to stay nice and sober and appreciate the misery of their miserable, ill-begotten poor people lives and understand that Jesus don't like them, and that's why they're poor. Enter Mr. Representative Congress creep John Linda, a Georgia re-pig licking, who is absolutely incensed that we're going to spend $60 billion this year on the food stamps program, you know. Never mind the fact that you can, you know, of course, you can now, the food stamp recipients can shop in a grocery store instead of waiting in line. You know, it used to be one of those jokes we told on ourselves here in West Virginia. Why can't you take a group picture of West Virginians? Because every time the photographer says cheese, we form a single line. Yeah. Now it's morphed into a means of welfare support for Walmart and all the other major food purveyors out there, whereby retail prices are paid for food, you know, markup included, all of that stuff, and the middleman's getting. What did the guy say in the mafia? Just to wet my beak, you know. Walmart's getting its beak sopping, stinking wet on the food stamp program. So $60 billion, and that's still not getting the job done, because America still has children eating on $3 a day. And enter Representative John Linda, ranking minority member of the House Panel on Welfare Policy, who says of the food stamp program, "This is craziness. We at risk of creating an entire class of people, a subset of people, just comfortable getting by living off the government. You don't improve the economy by paying people to sit around and not work. You improve the economy by lowering taxes. That way your small businesses will create more jobs." Where's that lightning bolt when I need it? Just comfortable getting by living off the government. Yeah. John Linder has apparently never been on the food stamp program, and he has never known the comfort of living on $3 a day or less of food stamp benefits and having that be his only income. Of not being able to go to a job because his car broke down. Of praying to God that the snow isn't too heavy so the roof holds. Of hoping that the hurricane doesn't come ashore so he won't become homeless and forgotten. Of scrambling to try to pay an exorbitant electrical bill or selling plasma or scrounging for items to put on eBay just to make a little bit of money so that the water can stay on, so that the electricity can stay on. We're going to create an entire class of people, a subset of people, just comfortable getting by living off the government. One wonders what these people do with all of that indolent boredom they must, that ennui that must grip them as they sit around getting by on the government. The next paragraph says, with nearly 15,000 people in Lee County, Florida, reporting no income but food stamps, the Fort Myers, Florida area is a laboratory of inventive survival. When Rhonda Navarro, a cancer patient with a young son, lost running water, she ran a hose from an outdoor spigot that was still working into the shower stall. Yeah. And it's hitting the expansion of the food stamp applications and the no income applications are majority white, by the way. followed by African Americans, followed by Latinos, roughly mirroring the demographic breakdown in this country. This paragraph was a real grabber. Kevin Zarulo and Diane Marshall, brother and sister, have more unlikely stories than a reality television show. With a third sibling paying their rent, they are living on a food stamp benefit of $300 a month. A gun collector covered in patriotic tattoos, Mr. Zarulo, 31, has sold off two semi-automatic rifles and a revolver. Ms. Marshall, who has a 7-year-old daughter, scavenges discarded furniture to sell on the Internet. Welcome to America. 42% white, 32% black, 22% Latino. And during the recession, the growth has been fastest among white folks. This is the dream world, you see, of the Republican Party. This is the American America that they have fought so hard to create. And, of course, how do we respond? What organization is out there, what lobby is out there screaming at the top of their lungs that $3 a day per human being is not enough to eat on? Because, you know, look, you're getting food stamps. What if you're homeless? Where the hell do you cook the food? Because the food stamps are even limited. You know, you can't buy hot food with it. You can't go to McDonald's with it, not that you'd want to. In 2009, according to Paul Krugman's column, may see the beginnings of some recovery. It may see employment numbers go up. It may see gross domestic product increase by year's end. But how much of that will be a recovery that folks who are on food stamps but have no other income will even notice? What will the recovery feel like for them? And we don't, we've got a pretty good idea, don't we? That was and like I said, Sandra sent me that story from the New York Times, and that was a hard one to stomach. And, Congressman Linda, you know, you read comments by a self-made son of a bitch like John Linder, and you want to go to wherever it is that happens to be his district in Georgia and just go and start going door to door and just asking people, what in the hell is wrong with you? Why did you put an evil, malevolent prick like that in the Congress of the United States? Are you an evil, malevolent prick too? Answer for yourself. Why is that man in Congress spewing that kind of hateful filth? He didn't get there by accident. You put him there. Now say why. And the first one that says family values or Christianity gets his mouth bloodied. You know, we talk about political accountability in this country, but Jesus Christ, this may sound a little wingy to you, so forgive me, but when are we going to hold the people who put these creeps in office accountable? Where are the media inquiries that ask not what's the matter with Kansas, but what's the matter with John Linder's district in Georgia? Are there no hungry people in that district? Is there no one in that district making that, getting the $3 a day and living on living the easy life on government largesse? When do we get to hold them responsible? You know, these teabagging idiots, the baggers, they're all about their personal responsibility. When do we get to start questioning them on why the John Linders of the world are in the Congress? And maybe they want to build some sort of anarcho-randian utopian paradise. But how do you feed people in the... Well, it's not our job to feed people. That's what the free market will do. Bullshit! The free market will let people starve, and it always has, and it always will. What these damn fools don't understand, though, is that if they continue to let people go hungry, one of these days, the hungry people might, if they turn their televisions off, just get a little cranky. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's 26 past the hour. John Linder is our first Moran nominee of the evening. But we have more. Dear Jesus, we have more. And right now, we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey.
Long time, first time.
Oh, hey. Who have I got?
Well, I'm a minister.
Okay.
But don't hold that against
me. Innocent until proven guilty.
Well, I'm the trout swimming upstream. I'm not your conventional minister. I'm not part of an affiliated church. I'm just a lone voice crying in the wilderness.
Well, a lot of us find ourselves being that. Can I have a name by which to...
Oh, yes. My name's Tobias.
Okay, Tobias, pleasure to talk to you.
And I'm calling from Kentucky. A little burg called Houstonville, population 350. It's the kind of place if you throw a banjo up in the air, whoever can catch it can play it.
You know what? You've just done the second banjo joke in a week.
Well, it's a very small... if you remember Danville, Kentucky, which is where Center College is.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's where they Cheney debated Lieberman. Said the vice presidential debate. And it is a big deal if they had it at Center College. You know, they got the vice presidential debate. Well, it's 9 miles from there. The running joke is, well, drive till you get lost. And there you are. But anyway, I'm listening to you, Mike Malloy's program. I'm a supporter of his program. He turned me on to you.
Oh, that's wonderful news.
And I'm a supporter of your program, too. I hit the PayPal button, so, yeah.
And it is sincerely appreciated.
Hey, you don't have to, you know, I got drummed out of a mainstream faith for teaching radical stuff like, you know, the Bible says when I was going to the seminary, I found out that most of your mainstream ministries are insane. That they really are just, I said, you guys are like the American Taliban. And they were like, well, that's offensive. You can't say that. I'm like, but it's true. You just erased the name and changed the name and you're not the same stuff. You know, we're going to kill our way to peace, you know.
Yeah, Pharisee State Seminary.
It is. Exactly. They're all Pharisees. And I said, you know, where do you get off saying that we're supposed to be evangelical? And I get looks from people like a dog trying to lick peanut butter off its mouth when I tell them, well, I'm a Christian, but I'm not evangelical. And they're like, huh? That's like saying, you know, water ain't wet.
Yeah, well, in Kentucky?
Right. You're right, in southeastern Kentucky, it's like, what?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, to be the way you are, well, no, and that sounds slightly pejorative, and I don't mean it to be that way, the way you are. Frankly, any minister that doesn't have a snake in one hand and a jug of strychnine in the other in Kentucky's near Episcopal.
Oh, I can take it to those churches. You know, they're in my family. I can take it to those churches.
Glory.
And, the Mountain Assembly Churches of God, you know. You know, everybody's got one leg longer than the other for standing on a hillside their whole life.
Right. We're like that, too.
And when you tell them, you say, look, if people come to you asking questions, seeking, then you answer them. But they're like, no, you can't do it that way. It's like, well, don't you believe what the scripture says, that no one comes unless they're first called by God? Well, yeah. But you're going to go out knocking on doors and getting in their face because you think you're going to be on the other side of the door at the exact moment that they're called? How does that work out?
Yeah, no kidding. You know, I used to sit in the Southern Baptist Church while I was having my mind worked about this.
Yeah.
And you know, in school, all the teachers always said, if you have a question, raise your hand and ask it, because, and don't ever be afraid to ask a question, because there's no such thing as a dumb question. You know, we want to work, we want to help. But the one place, and I, you know, and this was the beginning of the, you know, a little bit of wattage going into the light bulb, Tobias, and when I realized that, you know, you're sitting there being screamed at by the guy in the pulpit with the polyester suit, you cannot raise your hand and ask a question.
When we moved into our subdivision in 1999, and I swear I think the church is all crews looking for when the sold sign goes up, you know, when the realtor puts the sold,
yes,
where they have to put, you know, take their sale sign down and put the sold sign up for so long legally. I swear I think the church is crews. That way they know that they can come and pester you. And we were unboxing our stuff, you know, we were moving in, and here comes this big old, you know, late 70s Cadillac and a polyester preacher, that's what I call them, because they all wear polyester suits and bad comb-overs, with two deacons roll out, and I was in my last year of seminary. Now, to give you a paint, I'll paint you a mental picture. We'll go to a theater together.
Okay.
I'm 6 foot tall, 320, and I have hair down to my waist, and I look like I should probably be in a biker bar. And I had a concert t-shirt on from a rock concert, because, you know, it was a Saturday and we were moving in. And here these guys tool up, and I know more Bible than most three ministers put together, and it's in Greek, Aramaic, or Hebrew. You know, picture pointing and we'll and this guy summed me up, got out of his vehicle, did not introduce himself, did not say, hello, I'm Pastor Billy Bob from whatever, nothing. Didn't extend his hand. The first words out of his mouth to me was, you need to get right with God, boy. And I said, well, we spoke this morning, and we're cool. And he started to give me a lecture about my hair, about my manner of dress. And that led into a two-hour porch, which has become known in my friend's circle as the infamous porch debate. And he goes, aren't you going to, midway through the debate, the man said, aren't you going to invite me in your house? I said, no, friends are invited to my house, and you're certainly not a friend. And he goes, we can talk about scripture. And I said, okay, here's what we'll do. You're free to go to your car and get anything you want. You guys can free to converse amongst yourselves. I'll use only the verses I have in my head. And by the way, if you need a book that you don't have, you're free to go in my house and you can go to my religious library, which is about 1,000 volumes. And that's when it got deep. And they left and they never came back.
Oh, but I bet you got talked about.
Apparently I'm off the list. They don't ever come now.
Oh, no. You don't want any of the rubes coming by, because somebody might put a little bit of wattage into their bulb, you know, namely you.
It's like when the Mormons came by, kind of earned their first wife, and I'm not here to knock the Mormons. But
it is awfully easy, isn't it?
Yeah, and they came in, and I had all their books on my shelf, and the one boy was looking at my bookshelf in the living room, and he goes, wow, you got a lot of religious books on this shelf. And he's like, what kind of Bible do you use? I said, you're probably asking me if it's King James or NIV. And I said, I read Greek New Testament and Hebrew Old Testament. He said, huh. I said, yeah, huh.
They still make those?
And
you read that without your seeing stones, Reverend?
And I said, I tell you what, I'll let you guys in. I gave them water because they came during the summer and it was like 102 degrees and those poor little guys were melting. And I had my house so cold with the AC that you could slaughter pigs. And, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's me up and down.
Yeah, because I'm a big guy. And I said, okay, I'll listen to your whole spiel. We'll watch your videotape. And I said, you can just give me the whole spiel, even though I've got three books of Mormon on the shelf and I've read them and I know what you believe and everything. That's cool. If you can answer me one question, this is always the question you should put to the Mormons, and it just stops them cold. He goes, okay. I said, your faith, I said, it does not say, you've read the Bible.
Yeah.
I said, it says in John, after the resurrection, but before the ascension, when Christ returns to them, when they're locked in the upper room. Yeah? I said, Thomas wouldn't believe. He said, unless I put my fingers in the nail wounds and my hand at his side, I won't believe. And then when Christ appears to him, he does. And Christ said, if anyone comes into you teaching a different gospel than the one I've given to you, even if it's me, don't buy it. I said, now you guys come with the Book of Mormon. And you say, right on, it's another testament. And I said, we can get it out of the dictionary, and testament is a word for gospel. So you're automatically peddling a different book. So how does this not violate the words in red spoken by Christ? And they looked at each other and said, nobody's ever asked us that before. Can we use your phone? I said, sure, go phone a friend.
They were calling Salt Lake, oh my God.
And they got, and I went in the kitchen, and I could hear on the phone, he asked us this question, no one's ever asked him, we don't know what to say. And they come back in and they said, we don't know enough. And they were honest, at least they were honest. They said, we don't know enough to talk to you. Can we make an appointment for somebody else to come and talk to you? I said, sure. And that's like 3 years ago, and no one's ever came. I'm still waiting for the guy to come. I said, my house hasn't moved.
You know, the way you describe yourself, I love the little coincidences of my life. I don't know if you're familiar with the film, but it was a student film in 1985 called Fandango, and it's about basically a road trip among some recent college graduates. And there's a character in there called named Dorman, and he says very little, but everything he says is profound. And there are shots of him, and he was a divinity student at the University of Texas in the story. And there are all these shots of him going down the road, and he's reading the Man and Superman. And he's reading Steppenwolf by Hesse, and just that was what I flashed on when you were telling me about your library and you know your physical manifestation.
Everything. Like I'm currently reading Broken Government by John Dean, and I read everything. And I mean, I've read every religious book by just about every faith I can get my hands on. And when people come into my house, when the crazy Baptists come into my house, they're like, "You got a Koran?" I said, "It was Quran, yes, and I've read it." Why would you have one in my house? I said, is your faith that weak that you think you're going to be converted to another faith? What does that say? I said, that says far more about you than it says about another book. Ooh, fear the evil book.
That would be them. Well, let me ask you this, Tobias. Did you see the story over the weekend about, and you know, we there are certain things we expect from Fox News, right? But I never...
The truth not being one of them, okay.
Right, the truth, or even news not being one of them. Honest to God, they sort of jumped the shark for me. I never expected to see a news story come out that Brit Hume had gone evangelical and proselytizing.
The Tiger Woods has to convert to Christianity if he wants forgiveness.
Precisely, and one of the things that that I loved out of that, and I go here because of what you just mentioned, the pull quote from Brit Hume is, to the extent to which he can recover seems to me to depend on his faith. He is said to be a Buddhist. I don't think that faith offers the kind of redemption and forgiveness offered by the Christian faith. My message to Tiger is, Tiger, turn to the Christian faith and you can make a total recovery and be a great example to the world. Buddhism doesn't offer redemption and forgiveness? Does that jibe with anything you know, Tobias?
No.
I mean, you know, Nirvana, putting out the, you know, blowing out the flame, that's the ultimate redemption, isn't it?
My advice to Fox News is get out of the religion business, because if past performance is indicative of future behavior, they do so well at the newsy business that they're not going to do very well in the faithy business, because I'm not afraid of people of other faiths. I look at it this way. You know, some people say, well, I don't believe the way you believe. I don't have people come up to me and say, you know, I know what you believe, and I find it to be just ludicrous. I'm like, that's fine. And I said, doesn't that hurt your feelings? No, I'm not three.
And not necessarily on the same path either. I mean,
right. And you know, I look at it this way: we We're all walking a different path here, and it's like, you know, I think, you know, the most destructive force in the world that is the biggest stumbling block to Christianity is Christians. And I get a lot of heat from Christians. It's like, okay, I don't take tithes. We have home study. We don't have a church. It's like, because, like, well, Jesus didn't build this. Huh, he was a carpenter, and he didn't build a church. You think he could have thrown one together? Didn't build one.
True enough.
They met in homes, as was their custom. That's what the scripture tells us. And it wasn't until Constantine came along, a devout pagan, and decided, he stuck his finger in the wind and looked at the way the politics was blowing. And said, wow, this faith is up and coming. You know, and...
Yeah, because you're absolutely right, because even, and you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff in St. Paul's letters that are just crazier than a sprayed roach. But even that mentions the fact that they met in homes.
Yeah, it was all home fellowships. I always point out to the megachurch people, I have megachurch friends, and I would say, you know, Jesus said, well, two or three are gathered together, not where 200,000 or 300,000 are gathered together. I said, because the moment you put a hierarchy of people, men want to get in there, and, you know, they're going to mess it up. They're going to really going to say, how can we extract money? How can we wring as much cash out of people?
Well, that's corollary to the words of the late great Sam Kennison, who said he just wants to get to heaven, and he wants to hear Jesus ask Jerry Falwell, where did I say to build a water slide?
Jim Baker.
Yeah, Jim Baker. I'm sorry. Yeah.
The PTL, as in pay the lady.
Yep. Exactly.
It's the truth, God, and I always refer to them as that's God's special education team. We've got these guys, and they have led more people astray. And I always tell people, and I get flack, I get hosed. The ministers are the ones that rail against me. When I said, I had a friend of mine who honestly said, he goes, you need to quit teaching people to read the Bible and have them. And you need to tell them to get right and go to church. And I said, I have no use for a church unless we turn them all into homeless shelters, because churches have never done anything for anyone. I said, here's the test.
And they haven't burned something in your yard yet?
They've left some stuff, you know. I don't do marriages because gay marriage isn't legal. And I said, because, you know, it's not right for all, so I'm not going to do them. I've stopped doing them. I just don't do them now. And I have people say, why would you, we want you to do the services? Sorry, dude. If it's not right for everybody, I'm not going to do it for you.
Wow.
And, you know, and it's like, why did you get so liberal? I mean, you're a liberal. Jesus was a liberal. He didn't say, when a leper came to him, he didn't say, so you have a pre-existing health condition, you know, sorry, he can't help you.
No, and he didn't...
And Jesus was a Marxist, and it was like, well, no, he wasn't. You know, he says they put all their money in one bag, and each one took from it as they had need. Okay. He didn't say, well, if you look at them, they had people from the poorest fishermen all the way up to the scribes, tax collectors, the four guys that wrote the Gospels. You know, two of them weren't even contemporaries of his. They came later. And the two that did know him directly were the two most learned. Judas could write.
Yeah.
What in Peter wrote also? Because he was probably illiterate, dummy.
Yeah, although, you know, there's some argument out there that he, you know, he grew up in and around Capernaum and might have been fluent in some level of Koine Greek.
Right.
Certainly Aramaic and most assuredly Hebrew.
But you look at the Gospels as written, you know, Matthew, well, he knew several languages. You know, I know Baptist ministers do the same. You go, well, you say, name the 12 apostles of Christ. Like, Matthew, Mark, Luke, you know, it's like, hey there, dude, you know, Luke wasn't even, he wasn't one of the 12 because he came afterward, and he wasn't even a Jew. He was a Greek, dummy. What? That's right. So you don't even know what you know.
And see, you remind me, Tobias, of I'm sure you're familiar with Bart Ehrman, right?
Say again?
Bart Ehrman, PhD, misquoting Jesus, professor at University of North Carolina.
Yep.
I had him on the show a few years back. And you know, he started out in the fundamentalist tradition, you know, went to the Moody Bible Institute. And
oh,
then,
God, there's you a hotbed of idiocy.
Yeah, but you want to talk about the road to Damascus moment. He got accepted to the theology department in graduate work at Princeton. Can you imagine going, and that's what happened to Bart Ehrman. He went from Moody Bible Institute to Princeton.
That's a pendulum swing.
And I asked him on the air, I said, you know, Bart, you know, you're telling us all this stuff here, and it makes, you know, and it's grounded in fact. I said, do the guys in the pulpit, and you know, it's fair to say guys, because there are very few enlightened faiths that allow women to, you know, into the cloth.
They have to really pretzelize what nothing Christ did. They've really brutalized what Paul said to put the yoke again on women. And it's not what he meant at all. But don't go ahead.
Well, and I said, you know, these guys, they've been to seminary. Have they been taught the same thing you were taught? And he said, oh, sure. He said, but the you know, where you're talking about the evangelicals and the fundamentalists, he said, and I'm paraphrasing now because it was a long time ago, but he said, the fact of the matter is, they know what I know, but they are not telling the congregation. And in my mind, I said, you mean the rubes?
Well, the way I tell people is this. Seminary for me was an enlightening experience. And I mean, not in a way that, oh, really? You're so filled with faith. I was filled with rage. And it was rage against the machine of the seminary. Because seminary is like the old game when you were a kid, like telephone, you know, when they could tell you, they would whisper something to one person and then
oh, sure.
It was going to change by the time it got to the end of the life. What do you mean a blue dinosaur, purple, it was nothing like it was in the beginning? You know, where everyone changes
yes.
it a little bit? That's seminary. They teach you, you have the books, and the books are there. They are not teaching you the canon. They're not teaching you the scripture. They're teaching you what they were taught. And whenever you deviate from it and you're referencing, well, this is what it says in the Gospel of Mark, or this is what it says in 2 Timothy, or this is what it says in Exodus, and you go, well, this is how we interpret that. And you go, wait a minute, that's not what it says. We're now veering off. But this is the way we teach it. Because this is the way we've always taught it. Because this seminary has been here for 100 years, and they have this canonic, this rigid tradition, and they will always cling to that tradition over that Trump scripture. And that is the ugly truth that they don't want you to know. And of course, they're not hanging that out on the shingle of the churches.
Yeah, everybody's Tevye on the roof screaming tradition, right?
And the people go to the church and they go, well, my minister must know. He knows we know the Bible wasn't written in the Queen's English. But he goes, he went, he knows, he wouldn't lead us astray. Yes, he would, because he was led astray. He wasn't taught what the Bible actually said. They don't want you to get lexical help to know what the Greek
is. Well, and that's why, you know, that verse is there, and it's real easy, and, you know, broad is the path.
Yeah.
And you know, we're in a country where 80% of the people call themselves some form of religious, mm-hmm. most of those calling themselves some form of Christian. And nobody's looking at that verse going, wait a minute, broad is the path.
Oh, see, that's when I thought about the first time I got heat over. I said, do you realize how many of you all believe this? And everyone put, you know, 99% put their hands up. I said, how many of you all believe this? And 99% put their hands up. And you go, okay, if that's true, you're all wrong and going to hell. Because if you're the majority, the Bible says the majority is wrong. If everyone's all singing the same song, marching to the same tune, the one guy that's saying, you know, you're all probably wrong, that's the guy you should pay attention to.
But then you run into the whole Life of Brian conundrum with, you know, follow the gourd, no, follow the
right.
shoe.
And then it becomes, well, what do you really believe? And I said, that's why it becomes a matter of faith. And that's why Christ said, work out your faith with the infirmity of yourself. And these people that go out in public and pray and make a big frothy mess of themselves. And that's why you're supposed to, you know, pray quietly to yourself. Retreat to your prayer closet. I said, the way I always put it is this, it's very simple. Faith is a conversation between you and God. Now, fill in the blank of what you define what your God is and what you're comfortable with. But faith is a conversation between you and your deity. Religion seeks to stand in between you and your deity and translate.
Well, religion is a means of social control.
And I don't need a translator to talk to my deity. That's a conversation of faith, and that's between me.
And you know, that's part and parcel of an argument that I've long made, Tobias, that while we talk about the Protestant Reformation, there wasn't much reforming done because they more or less kept the same Bible. I mean, you know, granted, it wasn't the Vulgate, and they translated it into various local languages, but they were working essentially from the same text.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept the same higher, roughly the same hierarchical structure. Most of the older so-called Protestant religions still have a bishop. And they did was change the team colors. But there was never any real because if there's a real Protestant Reformation, you can't come out of that with John Calvin.
Oh no, Calvin was insane.
You know, Calvin was a guy. Calvin basically was a
terrorist.
Well, he was but he also had some real papal ambitions, if you will.
Oh yeah, he wanted
the infallibility and all of that stuff.
That and irresistible grace, and you know, dude, there's some stuff there that just. In the belief that, you know, God has so many people that are going to go to heaven no matter what, and so many people are going to go to hell no matter what, and no matter what you do, you can't change that. And it's like, and he fancied himself. Well, he knew which team he was on. I mean, he wrote letters like, you know, if he could, there's one in particular where a covered wagon, like there was a covered wagon of women and children that was, you know, basically thrown off of a cliff into a ravine, and knowing that these were innocent people, and if they were killed, it was his fault. But then, if it was done in pursuit of basically an evildoer kind of situation, then God's cool with it because he's on the good list. And you meet stuff like that, and you're like, dude, you're insane, you know.
Oh, and by the way, I'm getting a question. I'm getting a question for you from the chat room, Tobias.
Okay.
What do you think of Tim Tebow and his Bible verses in the eye black?
See, there's nothing. He's marketing his faith. All he's doing is because you look at it. I look at it this way: if it was a dark-complected player, a black player, who put serifs from the Quran on his face, they would be calling. They would just be frothed. People would be frothing. Even if they were saying essentially the same sentiment, you know, well-meaning sentiment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all he's doing is he's decided I'm going to market myself as it's all marketing. It's fake and it's.
Well, I mean, have you followed the verses?
Oh yeah, it's I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's the only one that immediately jumped.
The one that knocked me down was game before the Alabama game where he had one that, or maybe it was the Alabama game itself, where his eye black said, fear not, for I have already done all these things for you. And I was reading that thinking, he ain't talking about no Jesus. He's talking about Tim Jebo. I have done these things for you.
Well, I always think it's kind of humorous when I see athletes praying before a game anyway. It's like, they're doing that for themselves because, like, guys, you think God takes an interest in a sporting event?
I've been having fits about that for years.
Make you feel better.
Right, you know, and well, I made the allegation last week that the world is in the mess that it's in because every time God starts thinking about fixing some of the problems. Some daggum shortstop who hits 182 is coming to bat with the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth down by three. And he's crossing himself at the plate, and there's God. Nope, gotta drop everything. I gotta deal with the shortstop. So, yeah, but.
I always point out that, you know, we only have like four documented occasions that Christ ever went into, Jesus of Nazareth, ever went into a church. And every time he did, the crap hit the off line.
Yeah, nothing good happened. Nothing good came from it.
It went bad. So it's like, why, the church is the only building with a parking lot in the front so you can see who's there. Well, if you have Bob's there, yeah, we'll go. And that's what it's about. It's about being seen. And I told my mother, and my mother's a big holiness. Because, you know, holiness is kind of step out the back door of a local Baptist church.
No, I know from holiness.
You know. Point toward the nearest Pentecostal church, throw a dead cat where it lands, holiness. And she hates that joke, but I love it. I was Catholic for 10 years. I mean, I did a whole faith journey looking for stuff, and I think that looks wonderful religion.
Well, that's what drives me crazy about Brit Hume and this criticizing the Buddhist comment. Because the fact of the matter is, if you get hold of a nice copy of the Gospel of Thomas, even in translation,
I've got
that thing is up and down Buddhism, and there's plenty to suggest that there was no small amount of crossover, because there was plenty of traffic between the Indian subcontinent and that part of the world.
The crossroads of the world, right there.
Yeah, and whether it's Buddhism or Jainism. There's more than a little bit Jainist about it when Jesus goes into talking about never a sparrow falls, and consider the lilies and all of that. That's Jain.
That's like that's my favorite verse. The lilies of the day be sufficient enough for the day. Let them all worry about itself.
But you don't worry. You don't let tomorrow take care of itself. If you're somebody like, Pastor Rick Warren. Have you run across his latest pitch? He said he need, and I don't know if he got it.
Yeah, he's begging for $2 million in 24 hours or something.
Yeah, he needed $1,000,048.
Or he's going to publish the poems,
Well, that's implicit in that. And the week before it was Rod Parsley saying that the devil took all his money, but it turns out that the devil who took all his money was a 4-year-old that one of the people in his
Oh,
in,
yeah. I have had a profound... I don't hate people. And I really don't. And I don't make a semantical leap there. I mean, I don't. Because I don't, what's the hate? But the actions, because all you have to go on is the actions of people. But Rod Parsley is a guy, If I see people broken down the side of the road, I'm the guy that stops. I got jumper cables, I got enough stuff, I got tarps, I'm the guy that can help. I'd have a hard time stopping for Rod Parsley. But I probably still would. But just to be able to give him a piece of my mind. Because what? I don't like the guy. I put him in the same category as Glenn Beck. I don't like guys who knowingly market and play on the ignorance of others when they know they're marketing lies. They know what they're saying is patently false. They know it. It isn't like, I truly believe this ball's of bones, and I'm saying it because, glory to God, I believe this ignorance too. No. These guys, that's why I put them in the same category. They know they're selling to the ignorance of others.
Well, and that certainly gives them lifetime membership in the Ye Generation of Vipers Club,
yeah.
Isn't it?
It's spiritual multi-level marketing. I mean, they're selling to the ignorance of others, and, Parsley has been sued a number of times. And I get heat for preaching the fact that churches should pay taxes. I mean, I'm not a 501c3 organization. I don't think any church should be a 501c3 organization. They should all pay their fair share. Because it's funny how when they brought Jesus clean through the hoop, and he's like, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and unto God that which is God. Which is an explicit verse saying that you should pay taxes unto Caesar, because that was the question they asked him. Is it right for a Pharisee, the religious class, to pay your taxes? And Christ's answer is, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, which is the tax, and unto God that which is God, which is the tithe. And they've turned that around into, they've macrame that into, we shouldn't pay our tax, we should be tax-free. It's funny how that works.
Yeah, because Caesar was a pagan or something. You're lighting all kinds of little candles out here, Tobias. We just got an email in from Ron in Raleigh. And he says, you remember that woman stood up in a town meeting with George W. Bush tearfully talking about having 3 jobs?
Yeah.
And he says, the poltroon and chief misunderstanding her distress said, isn't that uniquely American? Do you think that woman still has those 3 jobs, or is she now trying to make ends meet on $300 worth of food assistance? This country's in deep doo-doo, says Ron. And then he says, speaking of Jesus H. Tebow, people talk about the separation of church and state. I want the separation of church and football. The only thing, and he's echoing something you said a few minutes ago, Tobias, the only thing that will stop all this finger-pointing and genuflecting is for a Muslim player to throw down a prayer cloth and praise Allah in the end zone.
Yep, and he's absolutely right.
Now all we got to do is find one.
Well, you remember what?
But he would be killed.
Who was the NBA player Jackson who changed his name?
Oh yeah, and wouldn't put his hand over the heart for the
Because they have a prohibition against people. They take no oath, and because he most converts to any faith, you know, the converts are the ones that are white knuckle, and he. Remember the stink that they raised about that? Most of the time he'd stay in the locker room and come out late.
And yep. Whatever became of him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they didn't renew his contract, and he was a great player. And it's the same thing. It's because they go on this religious mythology that we built in this country that, oh, well, this was a Christian nation, it was formed as a Christian. No, it wasn't. And that doesn't harm me as a Christian. You know, because it's like, what brand of Christianity? If we're going to magically sprinkle some pixie dust and call it a Christian nation, okay, which brand? Catholic or Protestant? It's like when people talk about the Ten Commandments. I got this the other day. It was one of those. The Ten Commandments should be posted up in the town square. I said, okay, which version, ma'am? The Catholic?
Which ten?
The Protestant version or the Hebrew version? I said, because you realize they're different. And I said, okay, so we'll not offend anybody? Are we going to post all three different versions of the Ten Commandments? Okay, so that's 30 now. I said, okay, now can the Wiccans post their belief, their statement of belief? How about the statements? They have 19 satanic statements. Can they post theirs? So now we got 5 posted. What about the Noahide Law? There's 7 more. Well, I don't agree with that.
Or what about the Eightfold Path?
And then I said, here's an idea. I said, we're just public lands. We're going to have to start annexing some land just to put these monuments up. I said, here's a better idea. There's already these little bitty buildings built pretty much every couple of miles called a church. And you'll probably remember one. Put them in there. And if people want to come and read them, they can just stop by.
And you can stand right on the street corner, right off the school grounds, and say, you know, come on over and see our commandments.
Right.
Or as the little roadside joint coming up the mountain to my place used to have, they had a sign that said, "See the baby rattlers."
Well, there's a thing right out here off of the major highway we live off of. Some local Tin Horn evangelist has these billboards up that says, like a clock that's about to strike midnight, that says, "Jesus is coming, are you ready?" And the running joke with my wife is, "Jesus is coming, look busy."
Yeah, my favorite is, "Have you found God?"
I didn't know he was lost.
You lost him again?
We need to do a GPS unit on him. He stays lost, but on.
Well, let me just ask you though, in regard to the story that I opened the show with, Tobias, the food stamp story.
Yeah.
And the people, you know.
That strikes close to home for me. That does not strike in my home, but I have a brother who's a disabled veteran. And his wife's disabled. He got disabled in that forgotten little skirmish in Panama, where people, when you say Panama, people go, "Something happened in Panama? We lost the SEAL team in Panama. We lost 2 Ranger squads in Panama. I know my brother was on one of those Ranger squads. He just got disabled in it."
And you know what? Is it the prosperity gospel that has got people, and I'm sure that John Linder from Georgia, if you ask, "Oh, I'm a family values Christian," and I'm sure that he flogs Christ every 2 years in his re-election campaigns.
I take those guys on head on, because I always tell them, "Well, why do you hate Christ so much?" Because it says what you did to the least of my brethren, you've done unto me. And you see, when we don't feed the hungry, clothe the naked, visit the shut-in and the infirm, or the man that's in prison, and we don't do for our brother, Christ says explicitly, read the red. I tell you, if you're too lazy to read the Bible, read the red. Read the verses that are in red. He says, if you've not done those things, you know, because they said, "Well, when did we not do that for you?" He says, if you did it to my brethren, or didn't do it for my brethren, you've done it unto me. And I was telling people, why do you hate Jesus so much? You got all these Jesus-hating Christians that hide under the skirts of family values. If we're not clothing, and that's where health care falls, right underneath there. If we're not helping the sick and feeding the hungry, and people, and they always say, well, like you said, well, Well, you know, they might get 18 cents on a food stamp and go buy a pack of cigarettes. So what? You're right. There's going to be fraud in everything. There is fraud in everything. But when we get, let's start with, let's hunt the biggest fish first. Starting in big business. There's more fraud there.
Well, exactly. And it, you know, it's worth remembering that a little bit to the south and west of you, there's a little Tennessee family named Frist.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran a little hospital empire.
Yeah, and built more money out of Medicare than Medicare may ever see.
Exactly. They were the single largest Medicaid fraud bust in the entire history of the program. But, of course, you know, that had nothing. Yeah.
Exactly. And I always say, you know, if people want to talk about the religious process, okay, we can talk there. Okay, fine. It's our moral obligation to take care of those that are less fortunate. You call them less fortunate, you call them disabled, you call, you know, the fact that my brother went and fought, you know, and is disabled, and his wife is disabled, and they basically have to, you know, scratch pennies and
oh, I believe me, I know exactly.
You know,
I know exactly what you're describing. We have led that life, okay?
Yeah,
I mean,
well, my best friend was a T5 paraplegic, and he we were talking about infuriating. He got disabled when he was home on leave from the military. He joined the military, joined the National Guard when he was 16. Back in the day when you could do that. And the only job he'd ever held was a lifeguard in the summers before that. Well, he got disabled, so they honorably discharged him. Because he got home, when he was home on leave, he was in a car accident, right? They look at what they give you for your SSDI disability is based on your earnings. The only earnings you ever have is part-time jobs as a kid. So what do you think he draws them up?
Next to nothing.
Nothing. He doesn't get any VA benefits for it. So he's on Medicaid for his drugs, which he has to have to live, and I go and buy his groceries because he gets $27 food stamps that they're threatening to cut off. Because he just got his thing saying his...
Oh, I remember when the prescription drug benefit, Medicare Part D, kicked in a few years back. And you had people with getting $27 worth of food stamps that got it cut to $11 because, you know, Part D was considered income.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of my inquiry. At what, you know, what kind of a country are we that we calculate the very necessities of life as income, as some level of profit?
Because he's got a bachelor's degree in mathematics and in cartography, because that's what he was, you know, aerial map reconnaissance, that kind of stuff. He can make maps, and he has a bachelor's degree in mathematics. The local school in the county he lives in, he was three or four counties from me, didn't have a math teacher. He was going to go down, and he went down, and he was volunteering, taking no pay, because he couldn't, teaching the math class. They found out about it. They said, well, we're still going to have to cut you a W-2 for no money. And said, but that will still assess taxes on you because it's a benefit to you.
Wow.
So he had to stop.
That's astonishing. Tobias, it has been a magnificent conversation. You've fired up some ideas. I can tell from the lights I got blinking here. I hope this will not be our first and last conversation.
I can assure you it will not.
And chime in anytime, and you know if you want to bust out and get all holiness and do the intro to a prayer meeting some evening, you are more than welcome to, my friend.
Well, we may have to make that a reality.
Well, you know, you can probably speak tongues better than I can, by and they'd be real ones, you know, a little Hebrew, a little Aramaic, a little ancient, a little Koine Greek. You know, the best I got going for me is the Golly Iest Omnis Tuisi in Partes Tres, and that's about as much as I remember. And that's Latin anyway, so it'll count. But you have yourself a wonderful evening, and my best to everybody down your way, and just chime right in anytime.
Keep it out of the cold.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Bye.
Oh, if Tobias keeps this up, we're going to have to, I don't know, Sophie in the chat room said we're going to have to give him an official horn title. We'll get to work on that. I'm sure he wouldn't accept bishop or anything like that, but... there's got to be something out there. So we will Let's see. Torn between taking a bumper. Let's keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Fancy.
Hey, Fancy. What's up, dear?
Hey there. Hey, to Tobias. Hey. Nice hearing you. I just, I did video for a number of years, and you've done radio. You understand this, that you're a tech, So what? So I found myself in the interesting position. At one point, I was the director of the Gay and Lesbian Show, and across the hall was the fundamentalist preacher. And we were fine about, we'd yell, hey, we need an extra hand in here on CG, and somebody'd come across the hall to help us, and the same with them. And it was really a very, very nice setup. But one of the things I would end up doing from time to time is directing evangelists. And I like directing for evangelists because they're polite, they smell good, and they generally pay cash. And this I found very enchanting about them. But it brought me to my theory that God loves TV evangelists. And God shows that love in hair. And if you will think back, have you ever seen a TV evangelist that didn't have wonderful hair?
Yeah, to quote Maddie from True Grit, hair that he combs like lettuce.
Yes, if it's short, it's sculpted, it's gorgeous, it shines. The profile, the silhouette, excellent. If it's long, and long usually comes with ministers of music. If it's long, they can do that Miss Piggy flip.
Oh yeah, get that whole back swept Beethoven thing going on.
Oh my dear, it is a joy to watch. And
although I'm a little paranoid, I got to think some of those are rugs.
Well, I was just getting to when I talk about hair, I talk about it doesn't matter how one acquired it.
Oh okay.
If you grew it or bought it. I mean, once you paid for it, it's your hair. And I would just, because I kind of dress like an unmade bed. I'm somewhat careless in my appearance. And I like floppy and sloppy, and my hair is generally questionable, and I would work with these people. And they were just awesome, and I did find hairspray was part of the game. But they were amazing people, and generally the one I worked for, they'd bring in their retinue of, they were prayer counselors. They would sit in the control room with me, and the phones would ring, and they'd do prayer counseling. But these were generally people I felt came to Christ pretty late in life, and probably under distressed circumstances, since they seemed to have prison tattoos and a questionable grasp of grammar. And
probably an even more questionable grasp of, scripture, but, yeah.
Well, enough. They were very polite, and I'm kind of short, and I don't lift things. I'm a Southern lady. I don't lift things. And every time I'd say, I need something moved here, they would appear. They were very handy. They were very good at moving things. And as I said, I enjoyed working with the TV evangelists that I did work with. They were polite and, to the best of their ability, quite tolerant. I would think, and if one actually felt that they were commissioned by God to do these things, you have to be a bit pushy. And it's probably, it's probably dismaying when they think, when I account to God for what I've, for how many souls I've brought, et cetera, there may be some apologies involved in there. And I actually suspect there are some sincere.
Oh, you would love it. ELO in the chat room, Fancy, has just posted a lovely photo of Pat Robertson, one of those things that's happening, before the little red light goes on and the guy points at you to tell you you're on the air, because it's Pat Robertson with his middle finger just stuck up. that black turtleneck sweater and the little suede, tan suede jacket, and ELO's comment behind it. How's my hair? With the finger up.
Thank you, ELO. You're a good girl. Now, and somehow, you know, I'm having senior moments now, and memories going. Who's our favorite faggot in Florida? Who's our boy down there?
Oh, Peter?
Peter?
Yes.
Lord, that name was eluding me. Peter?
I wasn't sure which direction you were going in. That was said lovingly.
No, I'm going with love and kisses. And appreciation. Peter did a show once in which, and if I understand this right, if you're sort of in mainstream religion, there is a board, there's layers of authority, one of which actually checks your books. And so if you're the pastor of the such and such church, and there's, not only are you responsible to the bishop and the larger body of the church for the souls and the spiritual situation of your folks, but you're also responsible for the money. And somebody comes along and they says, and so here's this expense for a rather expensive car, you know, and this is used for what? You know. And what Peter pointed out is that a lot of these folks who are in fellowships in they don't have that oversight of a. He did a piece on Benny Hinn that was very impressive.
Oh, I remember that one. That was just brutal.
Yeah, Benny Hinn gets like tax free money, and nobody checks the books. It can go any way you want it to.
Well, that's the beauty of being an evangelist.
Yeah.
You know, you call yourself non-denominational means there's. It's more than doctrine. It's there's no
oversight in your family.
Right. There's no accounting best practices either.
Yeah.
It's Enron with souls.
And Peter did a piece on that that enlightened me a lot. I was very impressed with the way he handled that. To realize, man, there's some really monkey shines going on here. This is more than just, you know, the widow's mite. We got there's some heavy wheeling and dealing and virtually no oversight. Praise the Lord. I'm going to go short on you today. I have one other thing I just want you to think about. If you've ever seen, what's his name? Ken? Lord, I am losing names. Sorry.
Copeland?
I'm sorry?
Copeland?
Ken Copeland. Out of Fort Worth. Out of
yeah, Dallas. Yeah, yeah.
And Copeland does this thing where he kind of closes his eyes. And he kind of presses down. There's this, you know, you can see a moment of strain in him as he prays. And somebody sent me a copy. They pulled a copy and they re-audioed it so that with every one of those, there was a nice long, long farting sound. And
you do have a low sense of humor, Fancy, and it is one certainly that I cherish.
You need me for those things. Nobody else will say. But yeah, I grew up the only Jewish kid in a little Texas town, and I have a tremendous fondness for these people. And I have a tremendous fondness. I know people today who I just admire amazingly because they do live their Christianity. You know, and they do incredible little feats of kindness. And they're very, very good. And let's not knock these folks out because all the philosophies and the aside, there are people who live beautiful lives and lives of kindness based on a belief that's at best questionable. So when we're racking them and we're teasing and we're laughing about them, also remember that part exists too. And with that, I'm going to say good night.
All right. Well, Fancy, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. And frankly, the idea of a Kenneth Copeland whoopee cushion, I don't know that.
it has its charm.
Oh, it does. It needs to go into the marketing phase. Or at least R&D.
I can see the face now. Eyes three quarters closed. Well, we do see a little eyeball. Of course, it's reaching toward heaven. And, of course, perfect hair. Bye now.
All right, you take care. Bye, Fancy.
Bye.
Bye. And we keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. That first call was great. Who was that?
That was Tobias from Kentucky.
All right. Wow. Man.
Yeah, and you got, well, you got the show going because, I mean, that New York Times story just, that was a tough way to get your first cup of decaf down.
Yeah, no, that was really too much. And the thing is that, I mean, we had spoken before about, okay, these unemployment benefits are going to end. And I said, they're going to end. And it's like, well, what? Well, this is what. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling, you know, that, and it's mind-boggling that the New York Times picked it up so quickly. I know, like you said, the numbers aren't large enough, I guess. As far as I'm concerned, one is too large. But the idea that this is now what's going on while the fake cheering section is trying to say that things are improving. But what I see happening is more and more people are going to fall into that because they literally have no income.
Yeah, this is Depression era stuff. This is when and counter that, I don't know how much TV you watched over the holiday weekend, but counter that with the new Allstate ad.
The what ad?
The new Allstate ad. You know, Allstate Insurance.
Oh, right. No, I haven't seen that.
It's the spokesman. I can't remember what TV shows he was on, but he has the really... Right, yeah, the really rich, resonant voice.
Right.
And they've got this new ad with him standing there and saying, will we call this the Great Recession, or will we call this the recession that made us great? And it's from Allstate.
Where those hands are going to choke you to death?
Yeah, and they've got this visual of a brick mason sitting down with his lunch bucket on a park bench next to a man of obvious Indian descent in a physician's white coat, and they're both eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on their lunch break because now we're frugal.
The way the corporations will use anything as an advertising moment, but no, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, I've seen it a million times now, and I cramp every time I see it. I can believe the tone deafness of corporate America, Sandra, but...
Yeah, no, that's pretty bad, but, yeah, I would almost say it's hard to believe that they could be so, unaware, wow.
And, you know, it's Allstate has weathered 12 recoveries, not recessions, but recoveries, and this one's different, because it's showing us that we understand that we're more important than our things. What does that mean? That Allstate is going to start denying claims now? Well, you're alive. Never mind your house.
Yeah, no, that's like the whole thing where, you know, they have women who suffer from breast cancer believing that the cancer is something good, you know. It's that whole sort of BS that, you know, we're subjected to. You know, where anything that bad that happens to you is an opportunity to what? Make it good? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So, and when you and when
accountable.
Well, and when you when you couple that New York Times story, Sandra, with the Paul Krugman column where he says it's 1937 all over again.
Yeah, no, that one was another one that I shook my head at and thought, you know.
And so people are going to start. If you put stock in Krugman, and so far he seems to have been pretty well, you know, spot on. Then what we can predict is that as 2010 proceeds apace, we're going to hear more and more that we have been led out of the recession wilderness and it's all over.
At the same time, you know, I don't know if you heard the little, which I think is interesting that it's being talked about, but this nonstop entitlement reform drumbeat that's getting louder and being financed by the oligarchs. I mean, you have to watch.
Right. And the Washington Post getting busted for its too cozy by half relationship with this right-wing anti-social security think tank.
Yeah, again, and trying to pretend that it's some sort of, you know, center, mainstream position. And all it is yet another right-wing think tank to persuade us dummies that, you know, we need to dismantle what's left of the, you know, shaky safety net. They're determined to get their hands on Social Security. And mark my words, you know, it's a Nixon to China moment with this Obama. Yeah, I'm starting to get real worried. What can I say, Bob? I'm done with the hope and whatever now. Now I'm just sort of weary and scared.
And that's what I was getting at with the juxtaposition between the food stamp article and Krugman. At the same time that we can anticipate that people will start hollering, hooray, it's over, the numbers, these numbers of people who have who have nothing in the world except food stamps is going to continue to rise.
Right, and it has to, because that is the only program that is available to people, you know, with this welfare reform and all the stuff that's gone down up to this point has left us with this, where you really, literally, will just starve to death in this country because there's nothing. There's no floor.
No, there's no floor, no basement. It's fallen so long it feels like gravity's gone, to quote the drive-by truckers.
And the idea that someone can say that this is creating a dependency class, you know, I just am like,
did you happen to, I've never, who is this guy?
I don't really know. I mean, to me, it's just, you know, just some other Republican in Washington. I mean, they can get away with these comments and no one ever challenges it. It's just bizarre. And these poor people who are in this situation don't even know what hit them. Still feeling ashamed, you know?
Well, I just looked him up real quick. He's from Georgia's 7th District. He's, you know, jowly and pasty-faced.
Oh, God.
And let's see. What's new? Healthcare alert. Whether you're for private sector solutions, a government-run monopoly, or something in between, healthcare reform, blah, blah, blah. He's got a healthcare toolkit that is nothing but right-wing palaver. Republican Doctors Caucus. Oh, jeez. This is... he has a blog.
Oh, God.
Nothing since December the 8th, 2009. If you're looking for more information on the CO2 fallacy and the climate change debate, I encourage you to read two recent pieces that I've authored, one appearing in American Thinker last week and another appearing in Politico. So he's one of those.
Well, yeah, no, but it's just so typical. But, I mean, in the meanwhile, though, you know, the lives are just being destroyed because you cannot survive in this country, with, like I've always said, without a job. That is the only thing that goes in this country because there is no safety net. And the, quote, dynamic economy with its 5% unemployment, that's a joke, right? Them days are gone. What are they talking about? They're projecting way into this decade before we even get back to the numbers in 2007 for employment.
Yeah, there's nothing. We are on a long, slow slide.
And right, I mean.
And there may get some grease added to the skids yet.
No, but at the same time, we're looking at, you know, no one with the political will or interest to introduce a second stimulus, which is what Krugman is alluding to. You know, and he basically admits that, you know, there's a snowball chance in hell that this administration will have enough sense to do a second stimulus. That's why he's talking about it petering out towards the middle of the year, right?
Right.
Because, you know, we need to have something following up now. Half the stimulus was these, you know, effed up tax cuts, the never-ending tax cuts that do nothing, you know, really, for what we need to be stimulated, which is the bottom layer of the economy.
And what's so hard to understand that, I mean, I don't, if we're talking, let's talk about food stamps for a minute and stimulus. Why wasn't there a doubling of the daily ration on food stamps as part of the stimulus? Because that's not something you can send to China. Maybe that's why. That's not something you can spend on a car. That's going to go out and be spent immediately.
Because the monitor is, listen, like you alluded to before, the food stamp program, this is a byproduct. It's just, oh, by the way, these subsidies have manifested themselves in this way. This is not something by design, which is something everyone should understand. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It just happened to evolve like that because, you know, these agribusinesses needed more government money. And, you know, I mean, it's a horrible thing to say. You know, I'm convinced that outside of Social Security, practically nothing is sort of initiated for the people anymore in this country.
Well, sir, we can certainly make that argument with the health care bill.
Well, that's a joke. I mean,
I think we're going to be able to make that assertion about the coming debate, and it is coming, on climate change and climate change legislation.
Well, that's just another, I'm sorry, I know it's more complicated, but that is just another scam that's going to create more hot money that's not regulated, that's just going to fly all over the world, enriching the same folks, and $350 will become $450, and, you know, I'm sorry, I just see that cap and trade is, unless they actually penalize people for pollution, it's just going to become another market, isn't it?
Certainly, if you read the Matt Taibbi stuff, that's exactly what it is.
And the carbon markets, if you look at the ones that are existing in Europe already, are dicey, and those ones aren't even as
Well, anything, you know, any game that you take to a casino will become dicey, and that's what, you know, I mean, that's what Wall Street and futures and speculate, it's all just gambling.
Well, no, but it's really bad now because what you literally have is the Fed, you know, giving them cheap money, and they're not investing it back into the economy. They're using it to do proprietary bets on countries like Brazil that has an interest rate. So they can make a buck. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sick. It's sick what's going on. The carry trade stuff, I mean, it's a bit complicated and it's kind of boring for radio. But it's really disturbing because you're looking at the mother of all bubbles, okay? A bubble so big that, you know, you can't even wrap your head around it. But that's what's coming because when you have countries that are able to move money to other economies where rates are up or economies where they're low, it's just, it's madness. And unless we put controls on this hot money, I really don't see anything happening but, you know, some other horrible financial crisis 4 years down the road.
Oh, and there are aspects of it that are absolutely mind-numbing in the complexity, or perhaps it's not complex, it's just a three-card Monte game. The idea of carbon sinks and giving people credit or buying credits for leaving forests alone.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it really is extremely complicated, but often that just masks the scam, you know, how complicated it all is.
Well, look, I mean, we know what happened at Copenhagen. We know the humongous snub that was, and I'm not one of these people that spends a lot of time worrying about, you know, who shook whose hand how, but what the Chinese did to the rest of the world was a humongous snub. You know, they sent a third or fourth level functionary to sit in the meetings who, you know, it was like a car dealership where he had to go and talk to his manager before he could come back with the number for you to buy the car on. And it was clear that China was there to squirrel everything that was going on. And as a consequence, anything that came out of it was so tepid as to be ineffective.
Well, you're talking about the Copenhagen thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the problem with that, though, is, you know, historically, if you look at the development in China, yeah, it's out of control and it needs to be dealt with, but hello, they haven't been industrializing for 200 years. You see what I'm saying? There is an argument to be made that the industrialized nations have been spewing this shit for decades and centuries at this
point. Yeah, and all of a sudden we want to tell them to not do it.
Well, yeah, but we need to because it's bad, but you can't expect them to comply without us doing something very drastic, which we're not. You see what I mean?
Yes, so, I do. And But among other things, if we want to crawl outside the paradigmatic box, so to speak, you know, we've had, and this crosses a lot of boundaries, but I was watching something earlier today in which the speaker said that public education is a function of the Industrial Revolution, and that it was created to make docile, functional workers. Not dancers or thinkers or potters or, you know, what have you, poets. And so, you know, we in the so-called West are coming to the conclusion that this capitalist model is profoundly flawed, but we're only coming to it after we have enriched ourselves at the rest of the world's expense using it.
Well, and also, public education is in... It's in serious danger behind that premise you just said, because if you don't need workers because you've offshored all the production, you certainly don't want to train a bunch of people to think because it'll get in the way of your serfdom, you know?
Right. You don't want the proles out there doing all that sort of free agent cogitating.
Right. So the next step is to ratchet down the public education, which I can look at California as an example of how that works out. When I was in public school here in California, we were number two. That was in the late 70s, whatever, early 80s, whatever. Now we're 47.
That's a rather drastic fall for a fairly short period of time.
Well, we're talking about a generation. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, and also now we have the jewel of the world, the state education system in the state, that's being quickly privatized. So, I mean, it's following the pattern. They don't need to have an educated population if you don't have any industrial policy. And that is the problem with the United States now. There is no industrial policy.
No and what manufacturing base we had has largely left.
Right, and they're laying the groundwork for one not to come back, I guess. I mean, an industrial policy now could be, you know, the green economy. That would be an example of an industrial policy that's not military.
Yeah.
You know, and now we desperately need industrial policy. I don't care what anyone says. This sort of service industry. Financialization bullshit—that's BS. We see what that's led to. It's for everybody.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, we can't all be stockbrokers or insurance salesmen, which is fast where we're heading.
Oh, I know, but it's a joke. You know, it's like you have to have industrial policy. Look at China—they got it. You know.
Yeah, and they mean to pursue it.
And now they're focusing on their internal market. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just don't really understand the end game here because it's not looking very hopeful. But I got to read you this one quote from one of the clueless left, I call him, Gary Wills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of a well-known Obama supporter. He wrote, "If we had wanted Bush's wars and contractors and corruption, we could have voted for John McCain. At least we would have seen our foe facing us. Not sell him at our back as we now do." I was like, damn, Gettysburg much. But, you know, it's just a really sort of disturbing quote, you know, coming from, you know, I'm just looking at that.
Yeah, from a true believer.
Yeah, that's like blistering. I was like, damn, you know.
And I was sort of reflecting on something similar to that over the weekend. From all appearances, based on what's coming out of the news, because there's nothing but Yemen, 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 Yemen right now.
Yeah.
What we're hearing is basically that our Peace Prize-winning president wasn't satisfied with the two wars of choice that he inherited. He wants one of his own. And that just, wow. I mean, I did some geopolitical self-educating on Yemen over the weekend, in between leftovers, a hop and John and things like that. And that's a place we just really don't want to be. I read, you know, because we're going to wind up getting in bed with people that we have no comprehension of how they operate. I read about one tribe in Yemen, Sandra, who are noted for their profound hospitality. You know, they will treat you like a god as long as you are their guest, but they then define, they define the borders of their area of influence, and the minute you step across that line, their phrase for you is, you are a good bat to shoot at.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and we want to go play in that sandbox?
Well, no, but that's, it's sort of, you don't even know what's come first. It's like I told you, I had read a few articles about Yemen before the crotch bomber or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, the undie bomber.
All of a sudden that popped up. And so you got to think, well, come on. You know, it's just, and now what, they want to do some sort of mechanized war on those poor people? You know, them people are armed to the hilt. They're like,
oh, yeah, and
the people in the Middle East, as far as I know.
Yeah, they are. Everybody's got a few guns. It's
like four weapons per. That's what I.
Yeah, it's like if you took the American South, taught it Arabic, and moved to, you know, they're southern too, the Yemenis, so to speak.
Mm.
You know, South Arabian Peninsula, south of the Mason-Dixon line. Both ways, it translates as got a whole bunch of guns.
Yeah, well, see, they also are a victim of, you know, economic circumstances, because Saudi Arabia decided to expel about a million workers. Now, you tell me that that's not going to have a huge negative influence on the country as a whole, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's a people bomb, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's too much. But see, I'm confused. You know, I just don't buy this all of a sudden. Now we have to direct our horror show on those people.
And that's the thing. I guess maybe we were busy watching other things. But, you know, one of the things that I did last week was I went back and found these Al Jazeera stories going back into November, and they go back into October. And this has been cooking for a while, and none of us saw it.
Yeah, no, it's just sort of, and you remember the coal. I mean, the coal is out of Yemen. So
sure.
They've been there. And I remember hearing about a lot of predators initially right after 9/11 that was hitting Yemen. So, you know, just thinking about some of the stories now.
Well, one of the 19 was a Yemeni, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. But, yeah, are we gearing up to do a big bombing campaign? Is that what's coming down the pike?
I fear that it is. I mean, that's every there's every indication that we are. I mean, I saw more than a couple of stories over the last couple of days. You know, we had to lock down the embassies. Yeah, I don't know if you caught
or not. Yeah, no, they left. The usual suspect, Britain and the U.S. evacuated embassies. Did you hear that?
Yeah. And
yeah, so that's always a sign of we'll begin bombing in 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, the Reagan moment, the bombs begin falling in 5 minutes.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying, when they clear out, you got to start wondering, well, why are they clearing out, you know? And in the meanwhile, there's bombs going off on the hour, every hour in Pakistan. What's happening?
It's getting worse and worse and worse, and what you see out of the right wing is, it's still not bad enough. We want it worse still. We want to blow up the world.
No, and in the meanwhile, did you hear about that man that had to go to the panic room? Because I'm sorry to laugh.
No, what?
His house was invaded. The Dutch cartoonist, that freak.
Oh, no.
Yeah, his shit got broken into, and he had a panic room, like Jodie Foster, and went in there with his grandkid. And the police came and rounded up the Somalian. But, yeah, so I guess that guy has security 24/7, but the panic room, you know, you forget that people do set themselves up that way. I don't know. I don't know why. It just struck me. It's just,
no, I hadn't seen that, but, you know, geez.
Yeah, so he's under attack again. And the Swiss, you know, they banned mosque and whatever they're doing. So it seems to be ratcheting up, you know. I'm bracing myself.
Right, and, you know, we released this list, Sandra, of people we're really scared of, nationalities we're really scared of. On the list was Cuba.
I saw that. I saw Cuba. I said, oh, come on, not. Yeah, I just, it was just demoralizing. It's like, are you kidding me?
Are the Vietnamese and the Chinese on the list?
Well, you know, Cuba has that huge bit of oil they may have discovered, so.
Anyway, yeah, that Hugo Chavez is helping them explore.
Yeah, I thought that would, but no, they're back on the list. I mean, yeah, I don't know, Bob. I just think that I can't believe that, you know, he's just going war on us.
Well, you know, sleep tight tonight, though, Sandra, because the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld the life sentence of Zacharias Moussaoui. Now, this is a guy whose brain was turned to oatmeal by torture and sensory deprivation. But the three-judge panel of the U.S. Fourth Circuit has declared that the trial was fair and that, you know, even though he represented himself, he didn't have a fool for a client. And
Oh, well, yeah, that, you know, great. Wow. Well, anyway, I have to go and help my little nieces with their ever-so-increasing second-grade homework. It's really over the top.
Piling it on, are they?
Huh?
They're piling the homework on?
Oh, my God. You know, it's just sort of, yeah, anyway. So.
Well, we're getting a little cabin fever here. We didn't go back to school today like we were supposed to.
No.
And we're on a 2-hour delay tomorrow, and it'll probably wind up being canceled because the snow's still falling.
Because of the weather?
Yeah, I mean, it's been brutal.
Well, it's just that the girls have had, you know, their little 2-week vacation, so now, you know, here we are back with their, you know, 20 pages of homework. I'm like, stressful second grade. I just don't remember that.
This is what you get when you come back from Christmas break. This is the coffee breaks over back on your head part of the program.
But anyway, I'll let you go and have a good show.
All right. Thanks, Sandra. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. Calling from California, that's our buddy Sandra. And a couple of things in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, I don't know whether you heard Amy Goodman today. I didn't. But he says a report has come out that there has been zero job growth in the last decade in the United States. It's the first time that has happened in American history. Also, there was also zero increase in profits on the stock market. Trickle down indeed. So for all the boom, 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 there was enough bust, 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 bust to make it a wash on Wall Street. But the problem is when there's zero net job growth in the United States, that's less than a wash for working people in this country. That's working people in this country losing and not gaining in the least. Oh, we have so much work yet to do for Moran Monday. We've got our first nominee out. I posted this on my Facebook page a couple of days ago. But for the nominee, the photographic nominee, I guess, this thing that came out of Colorado, I got the link from over at Raw Story. State employee investigated over an inappropriate Obama Palin image. A Colorado Department of Transportation employee under investigation for emailing an image of President Obama shining the shoes of Sarah Palin. It's a Photoshop job. And it is sickening. It is absolutely sickening. Colorado Governor Bill Ritter said the email is very distasteful. No, it's not very distasteful. It is sickening. It is racist as hell. And let's add this, it is typical. Now, that broke out over the weekend, followed in fairly short order by, by the headline statement that the Secret Service is investigating a hanging in effigy of President Obama. The effigy was found hanging off a building in Plains, Georgia, no less, the home of Jimmy Carter. Wonder if that's sort of a twofer. Ed Donovan is a spokesman for the Secret Service, and he told the Associated Press that they're investigating the hanging of the doll. It had a sign with Obama's name on it. Jesus Christ. We're going places we don't want to go in this country. And yet, you know where this comes from. The other thing I posted on my Facebook page before, for more on Moran Monday earlier today was a photograph of a bag, yeah, a bagger, tea bagger. We just call them baggers for short. It makes it easier that way. This is a photograph making the rounds. I've seen it over at Daily Kos, and now this is going to require a bad word. So little Timmy, little Cindy, little Susie, out of the room. Because this is actually the... How do you deal with this if you're part of the censored terrestrial broadcast media? Or if you're part of the newspaper media? How do you handle the name of this URL? Because little asterisks will not get you to it. The name of this URL, the name of this website is lookatthisfuckingteabagger.com. And in this case, and I guess it's kind of like, what is it, peopleofwalmart.com? It's a collection of photographs of, in this case, baggers in their natural element. And in this particular photograph, it's a guy in a red, white, and dark blue with one star state flag of Texas shirt. And he's got himself some sort of ball cap on. He's standing in front of a poster board sign in front of a table that says, Coordinators Only. There's a guy standing in front of him, taping him, making some sort of a statement, I guess. And he's holding a sign. I guess he's trying, and I'm not sure when the photo was taken, but it has come out in the last day or so. The individual in the photograph is one Dale Robertson. Dale Robertson. Why might that name be familiar to you? Easy enough. He calls himself the president and founder of the Tea Party. He owns the domain name teaparty.org. And I guess that's his gig. So there he stands in this photograph, and here we are talking about photographs on the radio. I realize we're dancing about architecture again. Love that phrase. I owe David big time for that. Dancing about architecture. But here he is standing in front, and he's got a sign. And the sign says, Congress equals slave owner. And again, sorry for the word. Taxpayer equals nigger. But here's the fun part. I know. Bob, how can that possibly be fun? He spelled it N-I-G-G-A-R. Yes, he is. You know, this guy may have, because it's photographic, this guy may have to win Moran Monday, Monday's Moran, just by default, simply for the spelling of that god-awful, hate-filled word. Of course, I don't know. It may be some sort of subterfuge whereby he gets to claim, well, that wasn't that word. That was a different spelling. It means it has a totally different meaning. But that's where we are. It's, you know, just another Monday in the swamp, I suppose. While we're talking and conversing and processing, as we should be, this is where they're trying to take the rest of the country. An effigy of Barack Obama found hanging in Plains, Georgia. that sign or that photo with that word. Oh, it goes on and on and on. And by the way, in November 2008, effigies of Barack Obama were also displayed in Ohio and Kentucky. White people are losing their tiny little minds. And, you know, I take no pride in being white or blue-eyed. You know, you have no control over it. What, you know, it's not an appropriate place to fixate any particular emotion at all. You just are what you are. And, you know, but you know what? These people make me ashamed. Not surprised, but damn sure ashamed. And like I said, we got tons more to go into. By the way, backing up just a hair, News Ninja Susan chimed in as I was talking about John Linder's comments of creating a permanent dependent class of people living off the government. And she notes, don't forget, that dependent class, we've already created that class. We call them congressmen. Entirely too sadly true. So we'll take a little break and come back and see what's, man, we have already shot through nearly two hours of this Moran Monday program, and we haven't even gotten around to Flush Flimball's fraud or a deeper in-depth examination of the lunacy of Brit Hume. That's all up for grabs, and anything else that you've got on your mind, you're also free to nominate your own Moran for Monday. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, the toll-free, direct dial number is 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Any way you want to get involved, you are more than welcome to do so. 3 minutes before the hour, this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Lord knows we can use all the support we can get. This is the Horn.
means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, as I intimated, so many more ands, so little time. 4.5 minutes past the hour. We've got a good 50 minutes of conversation left in tonight's program, although it does seem to be zooming by rather far too quickly for my liking. I hope for yours as well. I don't know. One of these days may have to turn into a six-hour show. You just never know. Before we go back to the Morans, context. I've got a story here, and it's one of those BS kerfuffles that the right wing is so good at ginning up and displaying their ignorance, save for the fact that the for-profit media will not call them on how godforsaken stupid they are. You've got this new theme that the wingers are working, saying that Barack Obama's never used the word terror or terrorism. That means he's soft on terrorism, and he's probably a Muslim sympathizer because he went to school at a madrasa. You know that Man Coulter cranked that one back up last week, right? It goes from Cheney to Jim Demented of South Carolina. The guy, and you know, this is just a question. Now, here's Jim Demented from South Carolina, who has held up for weeks upon weeks upon weeks upon weeks, months, nay, yea, verily, the nomination of the new head of the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA. You know, the guys who inspect your toenails at the airport. And I've just got one question. If the undie bomber had gotten through, would anybody in the for-profit media have called out Jim Demented for keeping that a rudderless, leaderless organization? You and I both know what the likely answer to that question is. Oh, hell no. Because everybody knows Repig Lickens is hard on the turf. Well, this from South Carolina's homepage, The State. the newspaper, via the Associated Press, headline, Senator DeMint standing firm against TSA nominee. A Republican senator who is blocking confirmation of President Barack Obama's choice to head the Transportation Security Administration is accusing Democrats of trying to install Errol Southers without debate. Interviewed on NBC's Today Show, Senator Jim DeMint brushed off accusations by Democrats. See, that's what Republicans can do, because they're magic and made out of Teflon. They can just brush things, just brush it off. Gonna brush that Obama right out of my hair. You know, that kind of thing. Brushed off accusations by Democrats that he's unnecessarily delaying Southers' confirmation at a time of increasing terrorist threats and leadership vacuum at the agency. The South Carolina senator said Monday he's concerned that Southers would allow TSA employees to have collective bargaining, something he opposes. He said Southers, and this is a quote, dear listeners, will not give me a straight answer. DeMint also said, what I want is a few hours of debate on Mr. Southers to fix the nation back on security and get politics, especially union politics, out of our security apparatus. Especially union politics? Yeah, that's the thinly veiled the rationale, if one can use Jim DeMint and rationale in the same sentence, that he's using. Well, if we let them unionize, well, next thing you know, we won't be able to respond to the ever changing tactics of the terrorists, because the union bosses will keep us from a doing it. I know I've said this about Jim DeMint before, but stupid bastard. I mean, talk about dumber than a whole big old 50-gallon drum of homemade stupid. Now, I don't just say that and not defend it. I don't assert that without grounds. The fact of the matter is, most of the people who are defending this country, so to speak, against terrorism, are unionized. And they're damn good at what they do because they are members of unions. And the union bosses don't seem to be, whatever that means, don't seem to be preventing anything. The fact of the matter is, Jim DeMint is a hard-shell, ugly old fascist from the Deep South who thinks that any working human being in America is not at his or her best unless they are terrified of the boss. You can't really blame him, I guess. That's the old plantation mentality.
Whip them again, put a little stank on it this time. Maybe they'll appreciate the hard work he's getting.
So where is that liberal infrastructure that could be out there asking, why does Jim DeMint hate America? Why can't anybody ask him that question?
No, we don't want to play like that. I mean, that's how the Republicans are, Bob. I mean, that wouldn't be nice. That wouldn't be cricket. Wouldn't be according to Hoyle. Now, that'd be like kidney punching.
These bastards need kidney punched. And the fact of the matter is, in this case, as opposed to when the right wing makes it up, it's real. Why does Jim DeMint of South Carolina hate America? Why does he want us less secure? Why does it? Because you'll notice that the undie bomber, you know, this is a kind of a TSA issue, isn't it? A non-union TSA issue? Yeah, just saying. But anyway, to return to the shape of my theme, there's this theme out there that Barack Obama won't say the word terror. He ain't never said it. Just like how he won't put his hand over his heart when he says Pledge Allegiance, he won't say terror. It's kind of like how a Satanist can't say Jesus. You've got the editor-in-chief at the New Republic, Marty Peretz, writing, President Obama used the terms terrorism, terrorist 6 times in his weekly address to the nation. I don't know how long it's actually been since he uttered those words, but my memory is that it's been a very long time. By using them, however, he was able to make, as it were, structural corrections, talking about Al-Qaeda as a network of violence and hatred strung out from East Africa to Southeast Asia, from Europe to the Persian Gulf. What?
Wait, Edith. Well,
there's only one problem with Marty Peretz's little thesis there. He's lying. Let's see. You remember when he went to West Point to announce that we were going to have peace through strength in Afghanistan? Let me offer the following quotes. America, our allies in the world, were acting as one to destroy Al-Qaeda's terrorist network and protect our common security. You'll notice the use of the word terrorist there. Gradually, the Taliban has begun to control additional swaths of territory in Afghanistan while engaging in increasingly brazen and devastating attacks of terrorism. There's that word. Years of debate over Iraq and terrorism. In the last few months alone, we have apprehended extremists within our borders who were sent here from the border region of Afghanistan and Pakistan to commit new acts of terror. We will strengthen Pakistan's capability to target those groups that threaten our countries and have made it clear that we cannot tolerate a safe haven for terrorists. And that's why I've made it a central pillar of my foreign policy to secure loose nuclear materials from terrorists.
Did he say pillar? You know, them Muslims, they've got them 7 pillars of Islam. See, there he is talking all Muslim again.
And that's how that crap works. Oh, where was I going? Where was I going? Oh, yeah. So with all of the, you know, with all of this nonsense,
you know, he won't say terror. He won't say terrorism.
When the fact of the matter is, the people who won't say terrorism are the right wing, sick bastards. They won't say terrorism when it's their people doing the terrorizing. Case in point. From the Associated Press again. Jesus, don't sue me. A gunman who opened fire with a shotgun at a federal building Monday, that would be today, killing a court security guard and wounding a U.S. Marshal before he was shot to death, was upset over losing a lawsuit over his Social Security benefits, law enforcement officials told the Associated Press. 66-year-old Johnny Lee Wicks opened fire with a shotgun at a security checkpoint, touching off a running gun battle with deputy U.S. Marshals. Sandra and I were just talking in the last hour about, you know, just where the hell is this going? This is where this is going. Although the investigation is continuing, the official said evidence points to Wicks' anger over his benefits case as the motive for the shooting. Court records show Wicks sued the Social Security Administration in 2008, alleging he was a victim of racial discrimination because his benefits were reduced when he moved from California to Nevada in January of that year. The case was thrown out and formally closed last September 9th. Hello? This is what you call domestic terrorism. I mean, if we're going to use the word, let's use the word. Let's not have a set of words for one class or one group of people and not, you know, well, no Americans commit terrorism. Really? Not even Timothy McVeigh? He's just a misguided former soldier. That's all he was. Alleging he was the victim, I don't know if this guy was black or white. I don't much care. But the fact of the matter is, you know, he wasn't upset over the fact that he had been denied benefits. He was upset because his benefit amount changed. I don't know the particulars. But I do know that when we reach a place in this country where
the citizens of this country, armed to the damn teeth, feel like it is an appropriate expression of their rage to go and take out a couple, you know, not taking out, and not, I'm not suggesting that it would be appropriate any other way, but, you know, he didn't shoot the judge, he didn't shoot a prosecutor, he didn't shoot a defense attorney from the U.S. Attorney's Office. He shot the people standing there at the damn security checkpoint, working people, just like he might once have been. And what a miserable comment that is. Working people, killing working people. Worker on worker crime, if you will. A passerby said he counted at least 40 shots. The first shot I heard was a shotgun blast. I knew it wasn't fireworks. I heard an exchange of gunfire. I was watching the street. This all according to Ray Frayers, sandwich shop manager and Vietnam vet. I heard an exchange of gunfire. I was watching the street. If they were coming my way, I was going the other way. Killed a 48-year-old deputy U.S. Marshal. Oh, I'm sorry. Wounded the 48-year-old deputy U.S. Marshal. And a 65-year-old court security officer who died. Now that opens up another question. Stanley Cooper, retired Las Vegas police officer, employed by ACAL Security. 65 years old. Now, I'm all for working as long as you feel productive and want to work. I'm all for that. But most of the time, people who are 65 aren't working because they want to in America. They're working because they're facing some sort of godforsaken disaster if they don't. And Stanley Cooper was a contractor working for ACAL Security. Why is ACAL Security doing security inside a federal building at the federal courthouse in Las Vegas? Why? I don't think that's an improper question, and I don't think it's an irrelevant one either. We shouldn't... God. U.S. Senator John Ensign, R., Nevada, philanderer, told reporters it appeared the gunman acted alone and the shooting was not a terrorist act. Well, Senator Ensign, how in the hell was it not a terrorist act? This is exactly what a terrorist act is. Would it have been a terrorist act if the guy's name had been Abdul? Of course it would have. Now, here's the answer to the question. In a handwritten lawsuit filed in March 2008, Wicks complained that his Social Security benefits were cut following his move and accused federal workers of discrimination because he's black. He said the case from the start was about race. Lots of state workers and agencies have took part in this scam, mainly for old blacks who are not well educated. He said the benefit reductions actually began in the state of California after he had a stroke and wasn't able to go to government offices to protest an earlier benefit reduction. Dear God. Now, the sad and sorry thing is, that where this was an act of domestic terrorism, and murder, don't forget, the right wing will be absolutely on fire with this. Come tomorrow. they will notice it because, in fact, Wicks was black.
God help us.
I guess, thank God, Wicks was calling himself Wicks and not, you know, some Muslim name. Because then the world really would be a topsy-turvy and upside down, and the wing nuts losing what's remaining of their tiny minds. But, yeah, there's more to, you know, and let's update this real quick. Flush Flemball. There I was, hoping it wasn't anything trivial. But he gets out of Queens Hospital in Hawaii, and it wasn't his heart. How could it be? And he swore up and down that he's taking prednisone and not pain pills for his back. But then he goes a step further, and this sort of confirms theory put forward on Thursday that Flush's incident was a publicity stunt. He immediately got out of the hospital and used his trip to the hospital as a propaganda point. You know, you, me, most of America go to the hospital with chest pains, and we get out and they've told us it's not a heart attack. The most any of us really want to say about it is, man, am I glad it wasn't a heart attack. And maybe we reflect a little bit on how we might change our lives because it was so damn scary that we don't ever want to go to the hospital with the real thing. That's what you and I might do. Not Flush.
The treatment I received here was the best that the world has to offer. Based on what happened here to me, I don't think there's one thing wrong with the American healthcare system. It is working just fine, just dandy.
At $40 million a year, there's not a disease on earth that Rush Limbaugh couldn't have that he couldn't simply write a check for. He doesn't need health care coverage. He's one of those people who hospital administrators don't snicker about when they write down self-insured. On the other hand, if you're not Rush Limbaugh, and if, God forbid, it is a heart attack, the most they have to do is get you stable, and then you are out the damn door, except not in Hawaii. And that's the irony part of this. Again, Repiglicans, Flush Flemball included, are not the brightest bulbs in the socket. Because when he was declaring the American healthcare system working just fine, just dandy, well, old Flush didn't take into account just exactly where he was talking about. He was in Hawaii, where he said,
"The treatment I received here was the best that the world has to offer."
Well, there's a reason for that. He was cared for at Queens Hospital in Hawaii by union nurses. And in fact, because Hawaii has relatively enlightened laws regarding health care, the SEIU notes in its blog that Congress's so-called reforms, many of them won't even touch Hawaii. The SEIU says the following. In fact, Hawaii is so forward-thinking that the Senate bill excludes Hawaii from some of its provisions because Hawaii's requirements on employers go farther than the federal legislation.
Now, that immediately opens up the question of, if it's good enough for Hawaii, why isn't it good enough for South Carolina or Alabama or West Virginia or New York or Pennsylvania or Michigan? And that's not me trying to drive a wedge between Hawaii and the rest of the country. That's me noting that it is good for Hawaii. Why can't it be good for us, too? See, in Hawaii, employers have to cover all full-time employees, which is part of the Senate legislation. And by the way, contrary to the things that L. Flushbo, with 100% of his conscience and tied behind his back, all of his the blathering about union thugs. And comments like, find a business in trouble and you will find a union involved. Well, not so much. In a piece by the New Republic, they wrote, Hawaii's experience refutes with real world evidence the opposition arguments that employer mandates are job killers. Recent studies of the employer mandate in Hawaii and in San Francisco, the other place in the United States with a strong employer requirement to contribute to health care, show that there was no measurable impact on jobs. None. Not even a little bit. Not measurable. Will Flush Flemball note any of that when he returns to the air, what, Wednesday? Let's see, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Oh, hell no! He'll just keep on telling the same old, tired, miserable, worn-out lies. And the healthcare system will continue to not be dandy for the 45,000 Americans that die every year for want of coverage. Not dandy at all. But you know what? The ad rates will probably go up for Flush. Because that's what matters. William writes in, speaking of living off food stamps and three jobs, by now with this ever-expansive and exploding grand economy that pays a minimum wage, which mimics the squeak of a mouse, how on earth would anyone even be lucky enough to have one part-time job, let alone three jobs? The lady who asked George W. Bush and was special looked to me over 50 back then. Chances are she has no job now. You reach 50 these days and you are not wanted. You are on the not wanted list of lost souls. Become 61 like me, and you're erased. I wish what William says was not so damn true. Overeducated, overemployable, undereducated, underemployable. There's always an excuse, isn't there? There's always some reason why some significant portion of the population of this country has to miss out on even the barest minimal shred of the American dream. Now, backing up to Flush for just a minute, I found this a little bit surprising, because usually the for-profit media are much more solicitous to the right-wing's answer to Jabba the Hutt. But they were downright snarky on the CNN program Reliable Sources over the weekend. Listen to Howie Kurtz. Ethically compromised, though he is, and always is. Listen to Howie Kurtz and his little panel take a run at America's truth detector. Anytime now.
Let me move on to another incident that happened in Hawaii that ended up being covered by the White House correspondent with the president, and that was Rush Limbaugh, who was hospitalized with chest pains. We were glad that it turned out to be nothing serious. Limbaugh held a news conference when...
Speak for yourself, sucker.
He was released from that Hawaii hospital, and here's some of what he had to say.
Based on what happened to me here, I don't think there's one thing wrong with the American healthcare system. It is working just fine, just dandy, and I've got nothing special.
Now, Rush Limbaugh didn't take questions. He didn't want to talk about politics, but he certainly made a point there about the healthcare system, didn't he?
Of course he did. You got to love Rush. He did an in-depth survey of how multimillionaire celebrity patients are treated, and they're treated very well, thank you. And so everything he said was fine and dandy. I mean, it's ridiculous on the face of it. And yet he made his point. He slipped it in there.
But, you know, maybe it's true that he didn't get any special treatment, but, you know, he has a $400 million contract. There are 50 million Americans, more than that, actually, who have no health insurance.
Well, you know, a friend of mine was yesterday in an emergency room with a heart problem and spent all day there, and he saw the other side of the health care crisis, namely long lines and jam facilities. So I think Rush maybe had a little special treatment.
Well, you know, you can argue that, and you don't want to be unkind. I thought the media commentator showed a lot of restraint from not saying.
Maybe she doesn't want to be unkind. What kindness, honest to God, what kindness has Rush Limbaugh ever earned? Ever? From us on this side. 20-plus years of talking about us in the most vile, disgusting, and disparaging fashion. And while they're being snarky about him, at the same time, what's this? Let's check this again.
Crisis, namely long lines and jam facilities. So I think Rush maybe had a little special treatment.
Well, you know, you can argue that, and you don't want to be unkind. I thought the media commentator showed a lot of restraint from not saying, you know, how do you feel about the 47 million uninsured, and do you have a pre-existing condition? He has been outspoken about how this health care reform is going to bankrupt the country. And the fact that he didn't take questions meant he got to make a speech. Ed Henry was the only person that asked him a question.
Asked a quick question about...
Right, about are you taking pain meds, which seemed, you know, to throw...
But you know what?
Well, it threw him because he is. But the fact of the matter is, that wasn't restraint. That wasn't restraint that the lightning quick Johnny on the spot Washington press corps was showing. Honey, the word for that is deference. The word for what they were showing to Flush was deference. Because the for-profit media respects money and respects power above all things. Journalism is, for the most part in this country, dead. And it has been replaced by a fawning sycophancy of money and power. That wasn't restraint. This was not a boating accident.
Bother me just briefly, some of the reaction in the blogosphere where some liberal commentators, when it appeared that he might have had a heart attack, were sort of rooting for him to have had a heart attack. You know, whether you think Rush Limbaugh's views are hateful or not, that struck me as over the line.
I agree with you.
Oh, shut the up. Now, there's Howie Kurtz, who has more ethical quicksand under his feet than just about anybody in Washington. He's compromised six different ways from Sunday. That was over the line. No, it's not over the line. Damn it, Howie Kurtz, you're sitting there with a tasty salary, too. Don't be sitting there trying to play the beans and cornbread with the rest of us. We live it. You ain't got a clue about it. And Rush Limbaugh has never shown any restraint with us, and he is due and owing none from us. I would go dance barefoot naked in the snow if a news item crossed my wire right now saying that the Flush Limbaugh had been run over by a donut truck. Or any other kind of truck, for that matter. It would be cold, but it would be worth it. And I didn't say how long I would dance.
Not because I'm that kind of crappy, miserable, vindictive person, but because he, and see if you can, I know this is a concept foreign to these millionaire types in the for-profit media. He earned it. He earned it. He earned those snarky comments.
That's ugly. I mean, you don't do that even when he's had other problems in the past. I mean, you know, I think where people might want to question him is about his stance versus what he personally experienced. Yeah. I think that's valid.
Absolutely.
How divorced are these people from reality? What would it be like to get a real human being on one of these panels who would explain that Flush Flemball has treated, he's called us communists, Marxists, radicals, almost single-handedly took the handoff from Lee Atwater and turned liberal into some sort of obscenity. And yet we're the ones, and you know what? We will, because we're the kumbaya crowd. We're the ones called upon to show restraint. Hey, keep bringing the tambourine to the knife fight.
That's fair game. I mean, he actually introduced that into the debate by holding the news conference and talking about how there's absolutely nothing wrong with the American healthcare system.
Yeah, thanks to crooks and liars for getting that up there, because, oh, ELO, I love you. In regards to Russia's health, this from ELO, I hope he fails. Epic fails. Epic fails. But do you see that? Yeah, in regards to Russia's health, I hope he fails. But I hang around Agnes too much. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you hang around me too much. I'm the mean one. She's all sweetness and light. What are you talking about, Sue? But this is, you know, just, this is a classic example of the double standard to which we're subjected. There is vilification and pure, outright, unmitigated meanness out there for us liberals. But the other side, nah, they get a pass. You want an example? Let's time travel a little bit. It's a little less than a month back to check out a speech, some remarks by Alan Quist. Quist? Wasn't that a breakfast cereal? Wasn't his nemesis Quake? Wasn't he a little green Martian kind of guy? Quist? No, that was Quisp. Quisp and Quake. My poor brain. Now, this is Alan Quist. He's a Republican running for Congress in Minnesota to replace Representative Tim Walz. This was from the Wabasha Smith County Republicans Christmas party. And he was laying out for the baggers, birthers, deathers, and tenthers, and general booger eaters there, what he sees as the, real task, the real job, the real struggle ahead for Repiglickens.
Central and talk about the energy that was there at State Central. I've been at State Central for a long time, and I like to see energy there, but where I really want to see energy is right here. And this is what encourages me. And somebody like Ryan, who compared to me at least, is quite young, stepping up to the plate, being a treasurer for the first time, okay, doesn't get anything out of this. Okay, I mean, told an act of sacrifice. I'm going to do what I can because our country's in big trouble. That's where the energy is. Now, second thing I want to mention, I want to talk about very, very quickly, and I want to speak here as a citizen, not as a candidate, because I...
Oh, wow. Okay, so he's going to speak as a citizen and not a candidate. That means somehow he's off the hook. He can be as loony, as birther, deather, tenther, bagger as he wants to be. And we'll give him a pass, you know, because we're better than that, right? Because, you know, we're liberals. We're kumbaya, y'all.
My efforts in the last 2 months have been focused far more in trying to stop this terrible health care bill than in being a candidate. I do not want to go to Washington next January and have a health care bill that's in place, all right? So I've been doing everything I can to stop that bill. That includes my own research on the bill, and I am the guy, and I'm just blown away by this. I am the guy, 300 million people in our country, I am the guy that discovered the huge marriage penalty in the health care bill. And I invite you, when you go home, to Google Americans for
Americans for Tax Reform.
Americans for Tax Reform. Late in the day, I'm an early riser. Grover Norquist's blog or website in Washington, D.C., which highlights my work on the marriage penalty. And it starts off by saying it's very rare to have a congressional candidate that produces really good information and really good research. I want you to know Alan Quist is the exception. Okay, this is one of the most respected websites in the country, recognizing my work.
What? Huh? Who? Grover Norquist has one of the most respected websites in the country? Where's that damn tequila bottle? It's out of reach. Damn it.
On the marriage penalty. And so I'm riding high. I'm riding too high to speak as a candidate. Because if the public finds out about the marriage penalty, I think this bill is dead. And that's where I'm coming from. One quick example. Here's how it works. Two people, joint income, $59,000. If they are single, live together, whatever, they're going to pay for insurance about $1,200 a year. They get married, they're going to pay $12,000 a year. There's a huge incentive in this bill for people to cohabit.
Wait. From $1,200 to $12,000 if they're married? Do you honestly give any credit? Is this like the MIT study that showed that people's power bills with cap and trade would go up by $31 a year, and the pig lickens just out of whole cloth, out of thin air? Ah, it's going to run people's power bills up $3,000, $3,100, $310,000 a year. Holy mackerel! It's going to kill Merca. Is this that kind of miracle math made easy that the pig lickens are so good at? I mean, if Grover Norquist likes it, you know, and he's got one of the most respected websites in the history of the interweb tubes, you know, it's not a big truck, it's a series of tubes. This guy is running in what district? It doesn't really say, but it's time to find the district that this guy's running in, and I don't have it at hand. I'm sorry. But maybe we start making some phone calls and listen, you're not really going to send this creep to Congress, are you? Because that's going to make the rest of us Americans think that you're a real bozo. I'm not doing this on behalf of any particular candidate, but I'm just asking. I mean, are you going to vote for this goober? Because it's going to make you guys are going to look almost as stupid as the district that sends us Michelle Bachmann. And you don't want to be in that crowd, do you? I mean, we'll have to mail a clown hat to everybody in the district. So, you know, please? But anyway, we haven't even gotten to the fun part.
Not married. Why? The Democrats know single women vote Democratic 2-1. Married women vote Republican. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most insidious.
What? Okay, this is the survey portion of the program. We got any married women in the audience? Do you vote Republican? Because he just said you did. Alan Quisp, Quist. No. He's a political candidate, not a breakfast cereal. Alan Quist just said you vote Republican. Everybody knows it. Single women vote Democrat. Married women, godly women, women who stay silent in church like they're supposed to, why, they vote repig licking. And, okay, I cut him off. I'm sorry. He was about to, this is the most something. And any time we get into that kind of repig licking hyperbole, you just don't want to miss it.
This evil piece of legislation I have ever seen in my life, and it's been pretty long.
The most evil piece of legislation he's ever seen in his life. Not misguided. Not liberal. Evil.
This is, I don't know, this is the Darth Vader, the kitties for lunch bill or something. What? This is the puppy kicking bill.
And every one of us has to be totally committed to killing this travesty. And that's what I've been working on instead of campaigning and driving my campaign manager crazy. So let's campaign. No, I have to kill this bill. So when you get home, AmericansForTaxReform.com. Now, why am I doing this? I don't need to be in lights. I don't need to speak. I don't need to be before a TV camera. I don't need to be in the paper. I've been there. I have done all that. I don't need to be there. It's because I, like you, have seen that our country is being destroyed. I mean,
Haben Sie Hotten geworden sein? What? Our country is being destroyed. Well, you know, it was December 7th. We hadn't had the Undy bomber yet. We didn't realize the grave threat we were facing from Yemen. But, you know, we still had those terrorists, those terrorists who were out to get us because they hate our freedoms. So surely to goodness it'll be the terrorists, because he says our country's being destroyed. What's it being destroyed by, the Space Commander Quisp? Is it the terrorists?
I mean, this is, every generation has had to fight the fight for freedom. This is our fight. And this is our time. This is it. Terrorism, yes, but that's not...
Wait, terrorism? But that's not what, Space Commander Quist? What is it not?
That's the big battle.
It's not the big battle? Oh, my God!
The big battle is in D.C. with the radicals. They aren't liberals. They're radicals. Obama, Pelosi, Walz, they're not liberals. They're radicals. They are destroying our country.
Oh, my God. The problem is so much worse than I thought it was. Somewhere along the way, I guess maybe on the night of December 6th, Barack Obama, who wants to bring peace by having more war, was transformed into a radical. Nancy Pelosi, who wouldn't know a liberal if she met one, was transformed into a radical. Oh, my God, it's terrible. The barbarians are at the gates. Somebody go to AmericansForTaxReform.com. Call Grover Norquist. Oh, God! But we're the ones who have to show the restraint. Because these sons of bitches, self-made, clearly ain't. One last example. We'll go to the phones. One last example of lack of restraint. Let's head over to the National Review Online. Isn't that Jonah Goldberg? The guy who thinks that Lenin was a fascist. You know, Trotsky was a national... Oh, my God. Yeah, National Review Online. They've been having kittens with crocheted tails over the Undy bomber. He's an underwearerist, you know. Cliff May. Oh dear God, that one. Here's another loony. Cliff May over at National Review Online put up a post there suggesting a bipartisan solution to dealing with the detainees at the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp. It's a two-pronged approach, Cliff May has. It's really a rather simple thing. Cliff May says, step one, return all Gitmo detainees to Yemen. Step two, use Predator missiles to strike the baggage claim area 20 minutes after they arrive. Wow, Cliff, what happens if there's some pregnant woman waiting for her baggage there, too? Whoopsie! I guess human life is only sanctified if you happen to be merkin, isn't it, Cliff? Yeah, we've got to show restraint, because the other side ain't. You know, every one of these Moran Mondays are getting more and more difficult because the quality of Moran is just going off the bozo scale.
It really, really is. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you an answer to Dorquist. I'm married.
Oh.
I vote, and I'm liberal. So, no, not all married women are Republicans.
Okay, thank God. I was getting a little scared there.
This married woman would never vote Republican.
Well, and
it's not that, but I could never conceive, well, actually it's true, I could never conceive of a Republican representing my interests. I would consider a Republican, but only the most liberal Republican, and then only if the Democrat were a complete space case.
I mean,
it's not that I'm not willing to listen to what the other side has to say. It's just these days they don't have anything worth listening to.
Well, and that's kind of where I am. You know, I've never voted for a Republican, but that's not to say that I wouldn't. It just happens to be that I have yet to run into a Republican candidate who shares even 0.1% of the things that I think are important for this nation.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I'm willing to listen. And there was a time, you know, it's been some time, but there was a time when Republicans actually had something worth listening to, even if I didn't agree with it. But nowadays, it's, you know, I read the news, and I don't watch the news anymore, but I read the news, and I just kind of just scratch my head. I guess, like, quite a bit of the rest of the country, and wonder, where are they getting this crap? You know, it's just... It's
well, I know, and, you know, a classic example of that is, you know, back in the early 70s, you could ask Democrats about Richard Nixon, and they'd say, you know, he's an ass, but we can do business with him.
Exactly. You know, and I don't have a, you know, I would just assume, see, the government controlled by Democrats, obviously, it's the good of the country, and for my own good, for that matter. But at the same time, there have been Republicans that were willing to work with the opposition. These Republicans, I mean, saying that the parties know is putting it mildly, you know, and of course it's overused. But the point being that they're just complete, total, I mean, they take an opposition party to a new extreme.
Well, I think it's so far extreme that it's not even a matter of opposition anymore. It's a matter of subduction and subterfuge. And pardon me for saying it, but how can you describe what they're trying to do to this country as anything but contrary to the very essence of what this country is? And I guess I'm saying that they're verging on anti-Americanism, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I think they have been for some time now, at least since George Bush's first term, definitely since 9/11. But unfortunately, you know, they use that so often for anybody that didn't agree with them that now saying that they're un-American or unpatriotic, you know, people just hiss and boo when you say that. We need a new term. I don't know what that term would be, but we need a new term to describe what the Republicans are because, you know, other than, I don't want to even say traitor because they like to use that one too. But, you know, they've taken, you know, corporate greed and the lobbyists and all that to new heights. And it just, I know, you know, I was a history major in college, and I know the evolution of our government. And we have taken so many steps backward in the last decade that it is just astounding to me that the American people would even consider voting for a Republican at this point, not until they get back together. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I absolutely do. And you know, what does that... And I guess that's part of the theme that I was sort of working along the way there when I was asking, you know, what do we do about the people in this clown's district? Can we call them up and say, you know, we're going to hold you responsible for what a jerk this guy is?
Yeah. Well, that's the least we could do. You know, I don't know what you do about people who buy into the BS. It's just, you know, obviously an awful lot of people do. And, you know, of course, the Tea Party movement is certainly a prime example of that. And, you know, some of them are now screaming they've been co-opted, you know, that kind of thing. But the fact is they were Republican from the beginning. And the fact that people will take time, assuming they have jobs, from their jobs, to go and protest the most ridiculous things. I mean, how can you protest wanting to give people health care, you know, about wanting to extend life and extend the quality of life? I mean, how can anybody be against that? It's just—it's astounding to me.
And it's a matter of—it's like mass hypnosis or some such, because you've got people that would directly benefit from this, or who have relations, relatives, extended family who would benefit from this, and they're willing to act contrary to their own best interests. And it's, you know, it's a phrase that a buddy of mine used to use. He said, you know, what we're talking about here are cannon fodder in the culture wars.
Right. Not to use another overused term, but the low information voters. You know, the only information they get is directly from the candidate. They don't ever research anything. They don't read a contrary opinion. They don't read the bills, that's for sure. Because if they had read the bills, there would have been no death panel crap. You know, that nobody would have ever said that or believed that, you know, and I guess they just don't.
Well, right, and the only
information.
The only way you make something like the death panel business stick is by having a compliant media who are not interested in anything that you and I would recognize as the duties of the Fourth Estate.
Which is one of the reasons that I don't even bother to watch the news on television. In fact, I have my cable turned off. I don't even bother with that anymore. And I don't read our local newspaper. I live, you know, remember during the election where they had this one little swath of red that extended along the Appalachian region, and it said this is the only part of the country that voted more conservative than the last election. That's where I live. And so I don't even read the local paper because it has a definite conservative slant. So I go on the Internet, and I read liberal blogs, and I listen to you, of course. And, you know, and other places where I can get something that at least resembles the news. Now, sometimes the liberal blogs go a little bit too far, you know, and are not entirely truthful. But they're more truthful, certainly, than the conservatives. But you have to dig. You have to dig, and you have to find out for yourself. And that's why when someone is, you know, talking about the bill says this or a bill says that, I go and I read the bill. It's not that hard to do. There's all kinds of places on the Internet where you can go and read the legislation for yourself. And you can look at how your representative votes. And I guess there's just people that don't bother to do that. You know, and it's so easy. And if you don't have Internet access, go to the public library. Everybody gets to go to the public library. You know, just or talk to somebody other than just sitting in front of Fox News and absorbing the vitriol. You know, I'm sort of starting to rant here a little bit.
No. You're not. No. This. You're conversing. You're quite sane. And you're saying it a lot better than I probably could have under the same or similar circumstances. But of course, you know, you mentioned the people sitting in front of Fox News. The whole purpose of the TV box is to keep them from moving, to keep them out of that public library, to keep them away from alternative sources of information. Because what you said earlier, how could you oppose something that would be such a net good as health care for all Americans? And if you get out there and you experience the reality of it, you can't. But only if you're sitting there being spoon-fed some sort of toxic pablum from the right wing using buzzwords, oh, our freedoms will disappear. Really? You know, overnight? I mean, what? You see what I'm saying.
And I wonder if the people who vote for the conservatives get the irony of that statement. Because George Bush, and George W., of course, and others in the Republican Party have done more to take away our freedoms than the Democrats would have a dream of doing.
And I think the obvious answer to that is no, they don't get it, because otherwise they would have been at the barricades forming their little teabagging movement, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, the ones who, those people that didn't complain while Bush was in office or did very little to complain. And, I mean, what do you do about it? I don't know. You can't go and educate the whole country, and you especially don't want to go into the South as a liberal and try to educate anybody. That's can be dangerous.
Unless you're already there, and those people...
Well, unless you're already there, which I sort of am. I mean, we're not the deep South where I am, but it is sort of still South, and I'm not from here, but I did choose to live here, and, you know, and most of my neighbors are actually older people, and they don't want to talk about politics, you know. But living in the Bible Belt, I get a lot of that right-wing stuff, and I'm not a churchgoer, but... The fusion of religion and politics on the right is something else that, you know, that it has gone wrong with this country. And the fact that, you know, they're trying to set up like an American version of the Taliban is just sort of, that's frightening to me. And I mean, talk about taking away our freedom. That's more of the greater threat to our freedom than almost anything else they could do. I mean, that's why the Founding Fathers put separation of church and state in the Constitution.
It is indeed. And you say it so very well. I wish we had more time to pursue the conversation. Please don't hesitate to jingle in any time. Unfortunately, I got to roll right now because I'm overtime.
Okay, well, I've enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you very much.
I enjoy your program. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope we'll hear back from you.
Okay.
Bye now. Shame on me. I didn't get a name. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour, but I can't just walk away from a conversation like that. Thanks, everybody, for joining in for this edition of More and Monday. We'll be back tomorrow night, and an abundance of stuff to talk about, I am quite certain. Thanks to all of you who helped keep the horn going, keep the horn on the air. We are at the beginning of January. That means it's a brand-new financial crisis. Last month, we almost made it to our monthly goal. No kidding. We almost did. So the hole wasn't quite as deep. But we're working on a new hole this month, and it would be nice if we could fill it in a hurry. So if you can, help. If you can't, it's certainly understood. But we're working on January and hoping for February. Thanks, everybody. Again, your emails, your calls. It's been a wonderful evening. Be back with us tomorrow evening, same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks as ever go out to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch, and also to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Go and have a look. Shoot them a note. Tell them you appreciate them being involved in what happens here on the Horn. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
The holidays are past, and now the long, slow, frozen grind towards spring is fully and truly underway. I hope you all had a very happy New Year's, safe, stayed in kind of New Year's weekend. That's what we did here. It was quite uneventful. A lovely day of college football bowl games on Friday. Enjoyed them all. Didn't get the outcome I wanted in practically any of them, but I enjoyed them all. My Mountaineers, Jesus, they came out and looked like Florida State was a high school team. And then they just decided, well, okay, it is a high school team. We're going to quit because they're not going to play anymore. And got their rear ends handed to them. Well, at least we don't have to worry about the fundamentalist Coach Muley getting a contract extension out of it. Maybe, hopefully, we're praying, sort of, to the extent that we pray. My favorite game of the day, honestly, was the nail biter between Northwestern and Auburn. That was a heck of a game. And a gutsy call at the end. An absolutely gutsy call at the end. I respected that choice. Ball game tonight, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the Fiesta Bowl, wherein both Boise State and Texas Christian University managed somehow to get screwed at the same time. Then again, maybe they wouldn't have fared any better against, say, a Florida than Cincinnati did, because Cincinnati certainly laid an egg. But at any rate, we have a very, very busy night ahead of us. Tons of information, tons of stuff to talk about tonight. And, of course, being as it's Monday, and it is the first Monday of the new year, it's the 4th of January, after all, it's Moran Monday. Carnival Barker voiced him. Hurry, 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 step right up, see your morans, coming right down the midway, only for no cost whatsoever. Come right inside the tent, you will see morans of all stripe, all types. No, they're all repiglickens, because that's what morans are. No one will be admitted after the show, 5 minutes into the show. Hurry, 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 get your program. You can't tell the morans without a program. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we got morans aplenty. We got morans at Fox. Yeah, who knew? I know. We got a Moran congressman from Georgia. Now, what is this clown's name? Sandra put me onto this New York Times story today, and it's a horror. Representative John Linda. John Linda, L-I-N-D-E-R. Can't pronounce my R's or G's when I'm speaking Southernese, as Jimmy Buffett has noted. Representative John Linda, a Georgia re-pig-licking, who is absolutely going crazy about all these poor people insisting on being able to eat here in America. The story, by the way, if you want to look it up over at the New York Times, is Living on Nothing But Food Stamps.